Greetings, everybody. We're starting a few minutes late. We have the conference call set up for 15 minutes after the hour. So welcome to the Galactic Roundtable again. I have Taryn, Rama, and Marita here with me today, and I'm very happy you joined us. We're going to focus a lot of attention on truth about 9/11 today. I hope you'll call in with your questions. A lot of people have questions on this topic, and this is a great day to ask them because we're going to go into depth about 9/11 today. As we're waiting for the folks to join us on the conference call, I'm going to open with a song to set a mood for the day. So thank you for your patience, everybody. Enjoy this.
One, two, three, four. Everybody talking about bags, 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 bags. I ain't giving bags. This is a bag. This is a bag. All we are saying is can't be the bag.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody. Greetings.
Greetings.
I believe we'll be able to call the conference line in about 1 minute.
I'm not able to mute out for some reason with Skype. I keep clicking on it and it doesn't work.
I understand.
So I'm wondering if I need to call back or something or reboot completely.
Sometimes that helps, sometimes it doesn't.
Well, should I disappear and try to call back?
We should ask Don, I think.
Yeah.
We're live on the radio right now.
Of course.
I can't get a chat from Don anywhere.
Oh, I'm seeing it here. BBS added.
There
I guess.
I don't want to.
I'm not sure if you see it.
I don't.
Hmm.
So we're having technical difficulties again.
Yeah.
Is Don saying that he's able to bring the conference call in?
Angel Sue saying it's in presenter's mode. We hear you.
Oh, good.
All sound great. Don.
Okay. If it's, I think maybe, I don't know if you want to call, if you want to call back in, I don't know.
Who, me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm wondering, because I'm not able to mute out at all.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, this will take me maybe 5 minutes.
It will?
Well, I'm thinking I have to completely reboot the computer and then come back on.
Oh, can you just live without muting out today?
Well, muting out is important, what Seth is saying.
Okay.
So.
Do you want us to wait for you for 5 minutes?
Well, he's saying we can restart the whole call.
Well, it's up to you guys.
Beth, can you see the chat? And
I can see no chat. I've tried everything. I can't see a chat.
Okay, I'm going to mute or I'm going to reboot and see if that helps.
Okay.
I'll be back.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
Bye. I'm gonna play something while we're waiting, okay, Don? So we'll stay in. Everybody, I want you all to hear what John F. Kennedy had to say about the 13 families and about the power and control that they had during his time and how it affected his work. So let me play this for you while we're waiting for the technical difficulties to get fixed. And thank you for your patience. This is very interesting.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control. And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned. No rumor is printed. No secret is revealed. No president should fear public scrutiny of his program, for from that scrutiny comes understanding, and from that understanding comes support or opposition, and both are necessary. I am not asking your newspapers to support an administration, but I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people, for I have complete confidence. And the response and dedication of our citizens, whenever they are fully informed. I not only could not stifle controversy among your readers, I welcome it. This administration intends to be candid about its errors. For as a wise man once said, an error doesn't become a mistake until you refuse to correct it. We intend to accept full responsibility for our errors, and we expect you to point them out when we miss them. Without debate, without criticism, no administration and no country can succeed, and no republic can survive. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. And that is why our press was protected by the First Amendment, the only business in America specifically protected by the Constitution, not primarily to amuse and entertain, not to emphasize the trivial and the sentimental, not to simply give the public what it wants, but to inform, to arouse, to reflect, to state our dangers and our opportunities, to indicate our crises and our choices, to lead, mold, educate, and sometimes even anger.
Interesting piece there. Okay, everybody, I think we're going to have to start over to make this call work. So, Seth, would you like to hang us up and call us back? This would be...
Hello, this is...
Greetings.
Did we get everybody?
Yeah.
Greetings. Can you mute out?
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful.
Everything's cool now.
Very good.
That's what I had to do, was just reboot.
Okay, very good.
And I think you can see the chat, can't you?
Let's see. I think so. I don't know. And nothing's been typed in.
Oh, it says, Beth, can you see this?
No, I can't.
Oh, my God.
I don't care. I don't need it. I'll just wing it. Would you like to start with some hard news?
Oh, my. Okay, Tara.
I'd like to change the subject off of technical difficulties 24 minutes worth of.
All right. Oh, my God. Well.
I am wishing we could find that international study and you still. Did you try yet? Did you
get not yet. It's a finished story. No.
Why don't you do it in there? Just see if you can find it.
Yeah.
That would be the best.
Well, today is Sunday. Oh, my God. Interesting. I remember them saying that yesterday.
Oh, I wanted to say to everybody that tried to call the call this morning, I misremembered, even though Karen called in the break to tell everybody that Grand Goddess Lily wasn't there today because she's still finishing the summit.
Right.
So we'll have to wait till next Sunday for that. But I will give the phone number. Just let me do that. And then everybody write it down. It's Sunday morning. It starts at 8 o'clock Pacific and 11 o'clock Eastern. And the number is 712-432-0075. Sunday
Say
morning.
Say that number again, please, Tara.
Okay. 712-432-0075. And the PIN number is 983-190-pound. 983-190-pound. And I just want to say that the last conversation I had with Grand Goddess Lily, I mean, what she's doing at this summit, all this that we've been hoping and praying for, this 9/11 to completely break. It's been excruciating, you might say, for a while now, watching all the little I's and T's dotted, and this criminal and that criminal. And yet the biggest deal is at the edge of the abyss, this economic treason thing has a decision to be made by all of the polity, really. Because the official story has to be changed now. And you can see that I just remember that, you know, Jesse Ventura thought he was going to be done battling the media, as he said on the Larry King Live show a month ago, that it would only take a couple of weeks and he'd be back home. And here's a whole month. So the hot news of focusing on 9/11 today isn't just a mistake, everybody. Okay, Commander.
Okay. What I was noticing with the energies out there between the hard news in terms of Lakshmi Singh and Leanne Hansen on the news, they were discussing quite openly the issues going on with the fact that all of the stories going on out there have to stem from the original story, which is called 9/11. And all the obfuscation, as Chris Story calls it, and the other crazy stuff going,
including
his own obfuscation of trying to keep him and the Queen not tied up in a knot with their thongs, if you will. And let's just say, what is going on in the future reality, which is all now, has to do with the original story that began that morning where we were going to get Nisara announced at a whole new reality. And Alan Greenspan is up to his crown chakra in this story, along with Andrea Mitchell and all the other whistleblowers who are paid by the five corporations called Let's just say FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, is a part of the UN, as well as the IRS, as well as the fake Federal Reserve. This is how deep it goes, where they haven't told us these things about these so-called governmental agencies that are not government. They're privatized corporations that can kill you and me anytime they want. And it's going on. And this is why my father, who art in heaven, Ashtar, is right here, right now, along with the captain of this whole operation called the King of Swords and Saint Germain, as well as Admiral Sananda. He is the ultimate say-so as planetary prince of this universe, along with Archangel Michael. They hold a dual role, and nobody gets past that nose or those noses at all. And what is happening is this entire drama is falling apart at the seams, and they keep propping it up each day. And with this fake backdrop that looks like a Western scene from, you know, the OK Corral. And if you go behind the set, you see these 2x4s leaning up at an angle, holding up the Western scene. Because there is nothing to this. It is all just the Matrix. And what is being said right now on the biggest levels is this change that is going on within every single one of us, and every single particle has to do with how the real news gets out there that resonates with the cells, the particles. We are moving into zero point, if we haven't already. Yet, when I go to start the car, it runs on a computer, it still starts. And I have this funny understanding that when we get to zero point, technologies like that won't work. Yet, they're still working, so I'm...
Are you sure?
I don't know. I've heard stories like, actually, from Greg Braden, that regular technologies may have some wonkiness when we get to zero point, and we're going to have to use the ZPMs, and, you know.
Well, you know, zero point and this the magnetic slip of the planet, which we were just watching with Greg Braden, who brought his name up here again. He said, forget about 9/11. We're going to have to deal with this anytime if we don't do 9/11 now.
And the biggest piece of this is that, I mean, today I got to hear another janitor. This was on something called experimental radio on PBS or public access in our town. And this was a Hispanic janitor, just like that other guy. I think his name was Mr. Rodriguez, and this guy was in building number 7, and he got out before building number 7 went down, yet he heard explosions as the so-called planes were hitting the other towers. And so this all happened simultaneously, 1, 2, 3. And what this has to do with, like Jesse talked about, is they, at a certain point, the signal was given, and I believe it was from space, from a satellite, and still and yet, people have questions. Why didn't the Galactics intervene in this? And I have to say, I've had chats with Ashtar about this. And it hasn't been pretty because of the stories. What is going on is, where is the intervention? How do you answer this question? And what I have been told is that 9/11 was allowed to occur for this planet to wake up. It was the one and only warning we would get. There would never be another warning. There would just be, hi, guys, we're here. Let's talk about first contact, how we fix this mess. and forget about the rest of the story, so to speak. Those intergalactic war criminals and the others, they're being dealt with as we have this little chat. And this is going on all over the planet, independently of any governments, any authorities, where our galactic friends are landing and interacting with each other. And how this story gets relayed is so magnificent and miraculous, and I have no words to describe it. I am a navigator, tactical officer on the bridge of the New Jerusalem, yet at the same time, I don't understand the scientific principles, how to put it in those lingos right here, right now, for people to understand about the magnetics or the GPMs or what's going wonky with Skype and everything else. And it's like, I wish I could tap in to what I know as the higher self, Ariamas, yet as we integrate our higher selves, it will be simultaneously.
Well, the thing is, too, that it's really important now for the people of Earth to accept the galactics. That's the most important key, because if they don't accept them, then what they can accomplish is extremely limited.
Yes, Obama has not been able to go. He got canceled his flight to the Polish funeral.
Oh, what they say? Did you talk about the plume? The plume that's up in the air over Iceland and
it
covers folks on the outer grid.
Yeah,
it covers all the way through Russia and all of Europe, except for Spain and the southern part of the boot of Italy, and it's almost at Canada. The whole plume, it's not funny. I mean, did you talk to them about what the galactics going to do about it?
I talked to Tom about this, and he said this is part of Mother waking up and signaling every one of us that it's time. They're, you know, 2012, not down the road. Things are happening now at an exponential level, and be prepared to understand we are moving at the speed of light, and I will just come right out and say it. I asked the King of Swords today on his message machine, what about this so-called world evacuation project and the stories going on with PAO and going to the inner Earth and holograms concerning areas within the Earth, Telos and Shambhala, where we're going to hang out and wait until something happens on the surface. We are having everything happen right now, and we are the ones we've been waiting for. The Syrian commander said it right publicly. And the next,
you know, the king, he made Basel to compliance, yet that's just the tip of the iceberg. How many people believe what that means and don't even know what that means, and they're still not got their higher brain functions going? And it has to do with everybody having to make a radical shift, because the energies are set to go bye-bye
in
all of us.
And I would say it has to do where, as you, there are folks that are marching on Washington today into tomorrow that has to do with the fake story called Timothy McVeigh and Oklahoma City bombing, which has nothing to do with peace, but everything to do with trying to create a global raging roaring storm called hate and racism and a race war. And that is not going to happen. Like Brother Dr. Cornell West said, we are going to do this with peace. And I love my brother Rush, even though he's a little lopsided. And the whole issue going on is the fake story that began the morning of 9/11 when Nasara was supposed to be announced and we were supposed to go on to Treasury banking. And Darth Vader, Dick, and Mr. Bush pulled off their Star Wars. And yesterday on Camp Loveway, Jesse Ventura came right out and just said, you know, Bush and Cheney did this. They need to be held accountable, and the people need to see it. And it is so bad, so ugly, that it is at the place where, you know, Jesse has said it, get over it. We are going to deal with this as a nation with other nations, how we move into the present time frame, where in order to heal the present, we have to deal with our past issues with the Ho'oponopono. Jesse didn't say that. I'm saying that in the sense where love these war criminals even more as they go to The Hague, and it could happen anytime, anywhere. They can be picked up. There is no more diplomatic immunity for these life forms. It is love them even more as we witness what is unfolding. And there are stories out there that as people investigate more 9/11, there are governmental agencies trying to infiltrate 9/11 truth groups to try to create issues, even to the point where hacking websites like Beth has been having problems with Galactic Roundtable being hacked. And this has to do with, we are getting so damn close to the edge of this being put in the forefront. With every single day, there is a new story that is coming out concerning the criminality of these 13 families. And it is horrifying. I'm watching the words here pop up on the screen. And I'm just saying, there is a randomness, like the random number generators that keep coming round, and it's lining up 999-000-1234-144. And it has to do with how I call it the midichlorians, the force. It is making this so right now where we are going to have our accountability and our freedom. And it has to do with how things line up. This, no accident, this man, the son of Malcolm X, was put in the place of the office of the commander, Indian chief, as they call him, to bring it back to the true nation.
Well, that isn't even right, because okay, they never were supposed to be called Indians, but within all the other... mediocre way of calling it. Not really right.
The Syrian commander from the Council of Nine, if you will. The diplomatic titles have to... It is time we move into the understanding of a galactic society as we take our place as the 33rd member of the Confederation of Worlds.
And it's inextricably involved with... actually acknowledging who the people of the Earth really are. They're the Galactics. And they had the Galactic Principles, and then this experiment changed that, and everybody that's in it has to go back and remember.
And it's the timelines that have gone wonky. Now they're getting corrected, and these 13 families have been exposed so deep to the level in which the very head of the so-called church of most of the people on this planet has been found out to be not what he claims to be, the office of the Christ. And it is in the understanding, love these ones even more, as the very foundations of our reality are shaken. This is what has been said in the Hopi prophecy, every single story across this planet for the last 26,826 years. This is the time. This is the place. 2012, December 21st, we enter Mother's womb, that rift, the dark rift into the galactic center. How we do this is with love, nothing else. And we are immortal. We are intact. And that's the one thing, these 13 families who are our brothers and sisters that got so lost in the game and believed the lies of the Matrix that they took it on, that they would perpetuate this, and lest they be found out, because they would be hung from the nearest lamppost, as George Bush Sr. said.
Yeah, he said that about his own head and neck.
And it is time that let us give them something they're not expecting, which is called love.
Mm-hmm.
That is the biggest key to this story. What would the captain, the admiral of this ship do called the New Jerusalem? He would sit down with George Bush, Dick Cheney, put his arm around him, let this man or these men sob in their laps and just say, okay, are you feeling better now? There's a man over here named Andrew that wants to talk to you.
Yeah.
And Andrew has some things to share with you as you enter a new reality. It may not be what you're expecting, yet you are expecting this reality, and it's got to do with the healing that has to occur on all levels for all life forms. And it's so deep because 9/11 caused a schism in the fabric of Mother Earth and
yes.
this reality. It caused a schism.
Because it was nuke energy.
It was a psyche. It affected the psyche of the planet with the
yeah.
people. And we have a fake war going on in two countries that had nothing to do with 9/11 to
no.
the point where the very fact that if we talk about this openly on a street corner, we are arrested or killed. That is how bad it is. And the only way, they can't shut this thing down called the internet, because it's got its own consciousness. And it's hooked up to the nanites across the universe. And this is where...
And these two wars are about the Stargates, and these are intergalactic criminals.
Yes.
And people aren't making that connection, and I'd like to talk about that a little bit. When you speak about the galactics, they get that. But when you say that Bush and Cheney are intergalactic criminals, they don't get that. These ones are using the Stargates, have tried to use the Stargates to control not only Earth, but other planets as well.
Including they were part of the Anunnaki that were thrown off of here and had to go to Maldek, so they committed the destruction of a whole planet in their past lives.
And there's stories about trying to go to Phobos and maybe the European Space Agency, ESA, is going to announce life on Phobos. Who knows?
Oh, no. Where's Phobos?
Phobos used to be a moon of Mars.
Oh, well, where is it now?
I don't know. It could be coming up here as a second moon for Earth, because Earth needs two moons.
Except that one's a fake one.
Yeah, well...
I thought that one was going to be replaced by the real one.
I haven't spoken to Lord Commander Cryon of Magnetic Service about that. He is in charge of that. So, as he has an opening in his schedule, I will speak to him.
Well, he should know about this Icelandic thing.
I would say so. All of this has to do with the understanding here that as Earth is being terraformed into a new reality, all of these issues will come into alignment with full circle. And how people have to understand that Bush and Cheney are intergalactic war criminals is understand, first and foremost, yes, these people are living, breathing humans, but at the same time...
No, they're not. They're reptiles.
They are reptilian hybrids who... this has to do with the story called The Black Sun. And if you go put that into Google, you will see the story about The Black Sun. And this has to do with the story that deals with the Thule Society and the original story that goes back to the ancient Anunnaki, Nephilim, Nephilim of, rather than Elohi, these were Elohim.
Let's just put it in simple language. This whole rigmarole is about not wanting to acknowledge the feminine.
Or the Stargates, or that we are an intergalactic society. Always has been, always will be.
Well.
And the thing is...
And who participates is in the hanging in the balance on their own account.
And the story of Stargate SG-1 and Atlantis and Stargate Universe all has to do with the series of Stargates that go out throughout the galaxy and the other various... How many galaxies are there in the Milky Way? I mean, in neighboring galaxies and particles, it's like, it makes my head hurt to think about it. Because what we are encompassing is the being downloaded with the consciousness of a god right now. And we are all creator gods, as Cynthia keeps telling us every Wednesday. Wake up to the mission of who you are and love these ones even more. Even if you're sitting in Abu Ghraib and Bagram and Gitmo Bay, you are sitting with angels around you. And still and yet, Earth will be brought back into freedom and bliss and joy. And how people need to get this at a gut level is the ones called Bush and Cheney are hybridized humans with DNA that was, there is also extraterrestrial DNA. And there is a lady out there that got this kind of right, but she also got it kind of wrong because she got compromised by the agencies. And I am talking about this, Ashiana Dean. And she may not even have the...
She herself is an Anunnaki that's not willing to admit to it.
And the whole technical understanding that goes with the Black Sun has to do with this story of the time gates that have to do with the Stargates. And like I was saying yesterday, there's that soldier Taryn told me about. He went through the Stargate and his leg was blown off. When he came back through the Stargate, he was walking through it. However, he got through that, the Stargate rearranged his molecules and he was able to get his foot back. What I'm trying to say here is supernatural things that are not supernatural. They're part of the quantum physics that Dr. Quantum, what the bleep down the rabbit hole. As we learn how to move with particles, we rearrange matter, antimatter, and bring it back into a cosmic awareness where what are so-called miracles and magic are simply scientific principles based on the laws of love and everything ever after. And these ones who have played with the ideas of hiding the truth and the wisdom from the people, they've kept it to themselves in their big lofty libraries like the Vatican Library and the other places across the planet where you have to walk into the midst of an army to go look at a book, so to speak. And it's over. And I'm just saying, we are witnessing the very ruin of Rome and all of it. And just today on the news, what I heard was, you know, Leanne Hansen, Lakshmi Singh were saying the Pope, you know, he is not out of the woods.
No.
And the people that have to get this at the biggest levels, these are war crimes against our children and against ourselves. And this guy on one of the calls yesterday brought it up. How do you love these ones who have committed war crimes? How do you love a war criminal?
Oh, Ariel from Shreveport.
Yeah, and what I would understand, this is what the king has told me to my face, and I have witnessed it with the captain and the admiral, and I mean Sananda and Ashtar. They would put their arm around George Bush and Dick Cheney and put a blanket around them and love them and then send them off to Andrew. And I passed the talking stick.
Okay, so now I would like it if you guys could talk a little bit about the Black Pope and Cardinal Egan and the connection between the head of the CIA and Joe Biden and how all of that plays into Bush and Cheney on that morning.
How that fits in is that at the highest levels with the Vatican is the Jesuit general, who is the head of the Jesuit order, which is a religious order, yet it's a military order, the Knights of Malta. And it's interesting, the Pope is in Malta today.
For a visit.
For a visit to say, I'm sorry, little boy, that I put my hand in your pants.
Oh,
you know,
no.
I don't mean to be graphic, and I know there's people listening that have children. Please forgive me, and I forgive myself. I am just trying to say it is over, and this is what
the Pope on the film footage from this visit looks sick, and his stance when he walks looks he doesn't look like himself now.
We are watching a living dead man. In the role of something that is supposed to be the office of the Christ and the representative of Sananda Kumara on the planet is the furthest thing from the truth.
Right.
And I know that I might, you know, people would like to hate me for saying that, yet it is the understanding that you have to get it within your own being.
Yeah.
Of what is happening, that this is not the true, where peace comes from, where love comes from. It is a place that these life forms are so tortured beyond measure.
They don't have any connection with love because they deleted their 12th strand of DNA where love
and
is.
It's almost physically impossible for to get it, but then understand on a miracle-type level, they could regrow that strand of DNA because it's there. The junk DNA, everybody has it, including the 13 families, and they can regrow by talking to your strands of DNA and loving them.
Well, for those who ask.
That's
right. And what they've been doing for the last 20 years for those who ask is putting walk-ins in there. In other words, they're taking out the soul. Because they're saying, I give up, I can't go anymore, but somebody please help. And then as soon as they ask, they do the walk-in.
That's right.
And mm-hmm. as a result, the walk-in still has a challenge because he's got to work with what's there, which is the personality and the ego of the past soul. And it's a trip, and I think you can attest to it, Lady Master.
Yeah.
Yes, and what I can say about what you asked is how this came down is that the Knights of Malta, this is the Jesuit general and the military order of the Vatican, along with the Berlusconi, a lounge singer. I need some Italian music here, but I'm just trying to say.
Accordion music.
Yeah.
He sings in lounges? Berlusconi?
That's how he got his start. Was he was a low-class lounge lizard, singer who was scamming on the girls and making deals with two-bit mafia crime family lords who said, hey, we'll help you out, dude.
You want to play with fire? We show you where the fire is.
Let's go talk to Tony. Tony will set you up, and on it went, and he bought a radio station, and a TV station, and another radio station, and another TV station, until he owned all the media in Italy, and this is the club.
Although Amy got on some network, she was able to get on Italian TV when she went over there. It was only maybe one.
Uh-huh.
No, but she did it.
And that lady who almost died, and her driver, her chauffeur, died in Iraq as she was trying to tell the story about what our U.S. soldiers who are doing outright murder want to kill in Iraq because of the orders that came down from Bush and Cheney. And this is how it fits in with all of this.
Well, it's a combination because they got programmed and microchipped and just completely got their brains rewired.
Yeah.
And it got into my understanding when I just watched that mere 4 minutes clip where these two soldiers were just going around and they were, okay, there's another one, let's kill him.
Right, let's kill that dog.
Let's kill that dog. Let's kill that taxi driver. Let's kill that kid.
Let's kill that guy carrying a camera on a shoulder strap.
Right, yeah, the WikiLeaks that's still to this day being passed around across the planet. This is why...
Well, what was going on in the cockpit was really weird. That was the story.
But what they're not talking about is the Stargate in Baghdad, which we posted a picture of.
That's right. And this goes back to the 20s and the 30s when Britain invaded Iraq. And I think that at a certain point, the Gate of Ishtar, that has to do with the Gate of Persia and the Jinn and Iran at that time between World War I, World War II, when empire called America was flexing its muscles along with Great Britain, created some very nasty stories along with Mr. Hitler. And all of these stories have to do with the transcendent souls that who came in knowing full well that we were going to have great performances, passion drama. Mother likes a high drama story. She is a drama queen. And I'll just say, so are her children. So they like it all the way to the top. Why did they come up with a story called The Passion of the Christ? And I'm going off here, but I'm just saying, Mel Gibson, that movie where it was so gory, you know, crucifying a man. This is how these reptilians and these life forms get fed fear, and they nourish themselves on the fear because they have genetically altered themselves so far back from their true nature, which was God-man, and still are, except they chose to genetically alter themselves to remove that 11th strand of DNA. You know, some of them have almost up to 10 strands of DNA, these ones, or 11. They don't have the 12th, and it's called love. Mm-hmm. Yet they can grow it. And that is the junk DNA that's going off right now like a nuclear bomb within every cell of our beings, every universe, all the particles. This is why everybody is saying, how come I'm here? What is the mission? What is the purpose of life? And the answers are within our particles, like in the movie, What the Bleep, Down the Rabbit Hole. How we heal this with each other is we look at these people who lied to us and have great compassion and great understanding, like Dr. West said. Yet there is a certain place where, like he said to Mr. Larry Summers, you know, you violated my space, dude. Back off.
Mm.
And, what I'm trying to say right now is that Bush and Cheney violated the people of Earth's space, and they will be held accountable. They were the ones that did 9/11, and it's coming full circle. And
so how did the CIA play a role and Joe Biden?
Joe Biden is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, CFR.
Well, at the time, he was the sitting chair.
Yeah.
So it was his job to take orders from the Vatican through the representative of the Vatican on this side, which is, as we say often, it's the the cardinal who's in charge of St. Patrick's Cathedral across the street from Rockefeller Square, where the UN is. And anyway, so he got his orders from Cardinal Egan, who was and still is that representative of the Pope over here. And then he passed them on to George Tenet, the head of the CIA. And then George Tenet went ahead and, you know, ordered 9/11 up. And the CIA went ahead and followed their orders and did what they knew they had to do. I mean, I don't know how many CIA members, you know, backed off and are still living for not doing what that was entailing.
Now, I have to say that what I have heard from the King of Swords about Leon Panetta is that Leon Panetta is a good man, and he is better than George Tenet. And Leon Panetta has worked extensively with Dr. Richard Hoagland and others connected with NASA and Dr. Greer and many others who are trying to bring first contact forward. Yet this little group called the Rockefeller faction and the faction one, faction two that are tied into all these ABC agencies, they are out of power, yet not, because what they're playing with is the seemingly vast array of technologies that are coming under fire that have to do with, as the energies move up in octave, and this is Earth Mother and the very universe in which we inhabit, are changing the reality, the nature of reality, where it is one of peace rather than one of war. And you cannot work within a framework of particles that are working within peace rather than war. It just doesn't work. It cancels it out.
You can't do both at the same time.
No two masters. There is one master, and it's called love.
That's why it's quite a dance to watch Barack Obama be a double agent. Woo-hoo.
And how to make sense of this mind-boggling story is that understand that when 9/11 occurred, Taryn talked about this yesterday before Jesse came on, where he was just saying the psychic scar that caused a rip in everybody when we watched this. And there were many that knew Nisara was supposed to be announced, and they could not imagine what occurred rather than see Nisara announced.
Okay, I just thought of something, because, you know, they're bringing up, I'm watching, see what they're putting up on the alternative programming. They're not putting anything up about 9/11 yet. They're putting things that are involved extemporaneously, like they've got the whole assassination of JFK.
Pieces of it.
Yeah, and then they've got something called Bonhoeffer. They're going back to Hitler, and Bonhoeffer was actually a good guy.
Yeah.
That almost got Hitler assassinated. They actually got a bomb right in his presence.
The Valkyrie story with Tom Cruise, if you saw that movie. And the Valkyrie come from the understanding, these are the ones, the winged horsemen that come from Valhalla, which is the kingdom of Odin. Hitler was reading these stories back at the time when he was studying about the Thule Society and Aleister Crowley and everything else that was going on. And it was bringing a reality in which where these 13 families knew they could pull something off.
Oh, I got one. You know, when we watched that first Nostradamus thing last night, Nostradamus, 500 years ago, set the time, the date, and the place for 9/11.
That's right.
And he described what it was going to look like.
To a T.
500 years ago. And so that's another thing that's about 9/11 indirectly, because they're saying, in case you were wondering, if these guys haven't been planning it, they've been planning it for 500 years. Got it? That's how serious this is.
And December 21st, 9/11, December 21st, 2012 is not the end. It is the beginning of
We're still here, and this is 2012. Is anybody missing?
And the Mayan calendar is simply ending one cycle and beginning another, like all the prophecies say.
Except unlike any other time, because this time we're not going back anymore.
It is called Sat Yuga, and we are having 100,000 years of peace, as the cosmic Christ has said.
Which is four times longer than any other yuga. And see, these predictions do not talk about that, except that they warn, and they really say, unless humanity wakes up, this is what happens here. And of course, the galactics are going to make sure, because Mother Earth asked for help, because she said, I'm not going bye-bye because of these fleas on my back.
No.
And so they are actually responding first and foremost to Mother Earth's call. And of course, they are considering all of us, yet, they're considering all of us with 100%. Yet it still has to be in the free will choice range of our own beings to choose and to ask. And in the meantime, these characters are turning it just the opposite and say, we're the chosen one and we can do any crimes we want because we're deciding what's going to happen. And we are the chosen ones and we cannot be punished.
We are above the law.
We are above the law. Right.
And this is what is... on many levels, C Street, and they come up with this every time that Rachel interviews members of C Street, where they say they are here to, in a sense, serve these global elite. These are the 13 families who think they and believe they are the gods, the Elohim, but they got it wrong. It's Elohai. And you take your orders from that which is on high, rather than in the sense we are equal with each other. There's none of this where, get down and lick my boots, Schweinl. No.
That's why you've got to ask with a really open heart and an open mind.
Yes.
They are not going to force their way. That's what happened to us already.
Yeah.
And they're connecting in the Kennedy assassination, they're connecting it to Hitler, too. In other words, the only thing that Kennedy was going to do to stop Hitler from progressing in the country here as the Fourth Reich was to announce the presence of the Galactics back then. And that's why they killed him then.
And Obama is about ready to do this. And I'm not saying when yet, I'm saying it's right now, in this very moment. And this is why everything is so crazy right now with the signals, because they know it, we know it, and it's like the final 3-4 pieces of the chess moves as it comes to a conclusion. And oh my, let's just say Mr. Obama is a master, you know, he plays chess like Mr. Spock. The computer always wins. And I'll leave it at that. I passed the talking stick.
Okay, thank you. That was really good, both of you. I appreciate it very much. What I'd like to do now is play about 2 minutes on a video, and it's talking about the explosions that were heard inside the World Trade Center. And after that one, then I'm going to read an excerpt from American Conspiracies by Jesse Ventura. Jesse's been, when he was on Barbara Walters, then they brought out the information about 9/11, and he's been on several shows since then. When he was on Larry King Live on Saturday night, when he did the hosting, then he started to talk about 9/11, and the CNN preempted him with a special news announcement, so it didn't get heard on the air. And one thing he's been saying is that nobody will review his book and nobody will talk about his book.
Beth, I just thought of something. You know, remember the first time he got on Larry King Live, the next time we got on the call, they had put the 10 minutes that were blocked out back up on the internet, and we got to hear that part. And then the next time when he took over Larry King's seat, they didn't do that, and that means they didn't want to show what he did. He probably did go on and talk about 9/11. So that's in the wings somewhere, but they just did not put it where it belongs.
Well, we've seen it. I'm pretty sure I posted it.
Only the first one, but not the second one. They did not post anything about those last 10
minutes. Mean when they brought up the thing about the miners?
Yes.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. And I believe I posted it on the Galactic Roundtable. We saw it.
Did he talk about 9/11?
I played it last Sunday. No, he didn't talk much about 9/11. He was with Rod Blagojevich and Ron Paul, Stephanie Miller. They talked about different issues. He did say that, you know, that Bush and Cheney took us into two wars. That's all he said.
In other words, when it went to commercial, it did never go to commercial. It just went straight to, you know, Kentucky or whatever.
Yeah, and they reported on the four miners that had died.
Yeah,
that came out on YouTube. That part that you missed came out on YouTube, and I played it here last Sunday.
On mainstream TV.
So he didn't talk about it on YouTube either.
When they had the missing minutes, what he said was that Bush and Cheney took us into two wars with 9/11, and then the pretty shill, who we call the girl,
right,
started yelling at him, and then that's all they said about 9/11 that day.
So that was
about five or six words. So since Jesse's been having trouble getting the word out there about the book about 9/11, I decided today I'm going to read from his book.
Praise the Lord, Mama.
I don't know how else to do it because I have free speech on this broadcasting medium, so I'm going to say it.
You go, lady.
You
master.
Go, girl.
So that's what we're going to do now, everybody. I want to set the mood. I want to take you back to that morning. I'm going to have eyewitnesses that were reporting that morning that they were hearing explosions that had nothing to do with any planes crashing. Here we go. Let me pull this up for you.
Me and Mr. Hess, Corporation Council, were on the 21st floor. I told him we got to get out of here.
This is not the best, sound quality. These are guys on the street, and there's dust flying around their faces, and this is an on-the-scene reporter interviewing people who saw this. Here you go.
We started walking down the stairs and into the 8th floor. Big explosion. Flew us back into the 8th floor. And I turned to Hesh. I said, this is it. We're dead. We're not going to make it out of here.
Another explosion. Yeah, ending up less than that. The consensus is it's too unsafe to go in there. And then all of a sudden it started like it sounded like gunfire. You know, bang, 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 bang. And then all of a sudden, three big explosions. I was about five blocks away when I heard explosions, three thuds, and turn around to see the building we just got out of. Antenna tip over and fall in on itself.
When the phone was like a bomb went off, and it was like holy hell, coming down the stairs. And then when we finally got to the bottom, they were coming out, and a mezzanine level there, and another explosion came right on the stairs. They were flying. Right in front of you, everything just went poof.
There's some secondary explosions, and then the subsequent collapse. I don't know how many people were there. I know there's a lot of firefighters, but obviously, there's no one there.
We were getting our gear on and making our way to the stairway.
Give me a phone number.
There was a heavy duty explosion. made it outside. We made it about a block. We made it at least two blocks, and we started going. All by four, it's going to pop it out.
Yeah,
all the way down. I was watching it and running. Just ran up with it. Then you just saw this cloud of shit chasing me down.
Could not run it.
I jumped behind a battalion car. I hit under the car. It was waiting to die.
Those were firemen and survivors and witnesses all testifying to explosions. That goes on and on. I mean, there's 48 minutes of tape we could listen to. I just wanted to remind you of the feeling of that day. I have this two-minute piece that I want to play. It's you're going to hear the words of George Bush back then, and that's poignant to hear today. We were all in such shock that day. There was no way to take in all the information of what was happening that day. Here we go.
Two airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center.
That's incredible.
In an apparent terrorist attack.
Oh, my God. Oh, the next building just blew up. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Freedom itself was attacked this morning by a faceless coward, and freedom will be defended.
If I could tell the world just one thing, it would be we're all okay.
The entire building has just collapsed. It folded down on itself, and it is not there anymore.
The whole sign has collapsed?
The whole building has collapsed.
What's a way, come away, is wasteful and useless.
They have shut down all aircraft takeoffs.
There's obviously massive casualties.
And another apparent explosion at the Pentagon in Washington.
We saw what we thought was debris, and we realized it was people jumping.
Give myself
around. Well, this is a horrible attack.
Light the darkness most fear.
Flames engulfing what's left of the World Trade Center.
Among the emergency workers, I can hear them screaming the police code for help.
Not yours, they are my hope, and I never.
A free American people will not be intimidated.
Our resolve has not been weakened,
nor will we be defeated
by these horrific and cowardly acts.
And justice will be done.
Really don't know. In this madness, but I do know that God is speaking. I have to believe that and I have to know that God will use even this tragedy to shake up the world.
The resolve of our great nation is being tested. Make no mistake. We will show the world that we will pass this test.
That video is great because it's a tearjerker, and it reminds us, and I think Ashtar said this, Rama, I don't know, that this was a good thing because it was a chance for us to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
That spiritually we needed to take back our power and remember who we are and know that this kind of fear cannot drive us to war anymore.
Yes.
That's right.
And that the what you just played, it was all I could do not to cry.
Me too, and I knew it was coming. That's why I played it.
Yes.
I want to take a minute and I want to say to Jesse Ventura, I know that you're like me, Jesse. I know you are a warrior who dreams of peace. And I wanted to thank you for taking your face out there in all this different media, on the radio, on the television, and bringing this message. It's extremely brave, and I'm deeply appreciative. And
you know
that my motivation is putting an end to what's happening to the children. and the mothers and the grandmothers in Iraq, in Afghanistan, bringing the truth about this. And, Jesse, I know that you've been censored by HBO and by CNN. And as a thank you, I asked my guidance team, what can I do? I'm so upset. They said, read his book on the air. So BBS Radio, I thank you for giving us the freedom of speech. It means a lot to me.
And if you're out there, Jesse, you're always welcome here.
I was thinking about the time when he was on The View, you know. I think he said a lot more than Barbara Walters wanted to hear.
Yeah.
He did a lot on that show. He talked about 9/11. It didn't go... Yeah,
not only that, but Arianna Huffington pulled that clip from her website that day, and I had to film the clip from the View website and publish it on YouTube so it would still be out there.
Yeah, I don't think she did it. I think that every time we see someone who's a real whistleblower get something pulled, they didn't do it.
No. Well, they're getting censored from above.
Exactly.
And this is that fake corporation called the FCC, which is part of the UN.
Mm-hmm. See, right now, this is really the best time to help people get through this, because every time that people have questions here or anywhere, actually, when they're not quite knowing the how could this dichotomy be in one person? How could a man like this
dig
some more? No, I'm talking about Barack.
Oh.
How could he go into Afghanistan? You know, it's absolutely ludicrous. Yet the thing is that when these things happen, and then the people actually start questioning, what in the world? How could this be happening? That's when we can get these little renegades and their faces up there for everybody to see. And, I mean, this is a landmark, what Barack Obama did. Remember when he had that little room and he had the whole Senate in there?
Oh, yeah.
About this health care bill? And
the Blair House.
And Deanna called me up and she said, I cried when I read this other piece about all the deals that he had to make with the pharmaceuticals and, I don't know, the doctors and the everybody.
Insurance company. Insurance company.
And I'm just saying, nevertheless, the insurance company lost. Because mm-hmm. now it's out there. The people are going, okay, everything's fine. How come these idiots are over here at a tea party? You know, all of a sudden, going back into retrograde about everything. And, you know, people, when they see something and they go through this sense of, oh, my God, this man really did something that's never been done before. And
right.
then they see all this crap on Fox and everything. Well, it's good because, you know what? They've met their match in us now.
They have.
Right.
And now we have the opportunity to do it with, you know, someone like Rachel in her blue jeans or black blue jeans and her jacket and going up there to Tiny Town. I'm going, oh, my God, what am I watching?
Okay, so what we're going to do now is, on the Huffington Post and on CNN and HBO, this is what they didn't want you to hear about. This is a quote from the new book that Jesse Ventura wrote, and he had a co-writer, Dick Russell, and it's called American Conspiracy. It says... I was in my third year as Minnesota's governor on September 11th, 2001, after the devastation of the Pentagon being hit and the Twin Towers falling. I put the National Guard on alert and secured some of our public buildings. The following Sunday morning, we were the first state to hold a memorial for the nearly 3,000 victims. More than 40,000 people showed up on the front lawn of the state capitol when a steady rain fell. I'll never forget Native American shamans beating drums alongside honor guards who represented the police and firefighters and military. It still chokes me up to think about it. Looking out on hundreds of flags fluttering in the breeze, I remember saying at the end of the 2 hours, we will promote good against evil, and finally we will together restore our sense of freedom by conquering this enemy. I never wanted to believe anything different than what our government told us about the tragic day. But here's what John Farmer, a senior counsel for the 9/11 Commission, who drafted the original report, has to say in a new book. Quote, at some level of the government, at some point in time, there was an agreement not to tell the truth about what happened, end quote. What more do we need? Are we willing to live with another lie to go with the Warren Report, the Iran-Contra cover-up, and many other, quote-unquote, official stories? I certainly never expected to think that elements of the Bush administration were complicit with the enemy. Today, though, I am convinced that some people inside our government knew the attack was going to happen and allowed it to come to pass because it furthered their political agenda. I don't necessarily believe that they orchestrated it themselves, although the door is definitely open for that. I say this after expending many hours researching things about the official story that don't add up and interviewing a number of witnesses with firsthand knowledge that contradicts what we were told. As a patriotic American, I say this with a heavy heart and with an outrage that really knows no words. But it's something we, as a nation, must come to terms with. Otherwise, it could happen again. From day one, there was something that puzzled me. You had four airplanes being hijacked on the same morning. Maybe the first one snuck by the radar, but the next three... I'd been inside air traffic control where you've got a dozen people watching every plane in their sector. They know what direction all the aircraft are supposed to be going, and here were four planes going directly opposite of their normal flight path. But we're supposed to believe that no alarm bells went off anywhere, so no fighter jets got scrambled to intercept the planes. Was everybody asleep at the switch? How could the FAA and our air defenses experience such a miserable failure? I want to tell you a short story about a guy named Charles Lewis, whom my writing colleague Dick Russell interviewed recently in Southern California. Until 2 months before September 11th, Lewis had worked at LAX and the quality control manager for Kiewit Pacific Construction on its taxiway C, letter C, project. A large part of his duties involved security in the airport operations area, or AOA. There, he got to know employees of various agencies, the LA World Airport Police, the LAPD, California Highway Patrol, the FBI, U.S. Customs, and others. When the 9/11 attacks occurred, Lewis was a deputy inspector for the city of LA during a seismic retrofit of the LA Hilton Towers Hotel, only a few minutes from the airport by car. After making sure the hotel construction crew went home, Lewis rushed over to LAX's guard post too because he was one of the very few people who knew how to fix certain parts of the new security system in case any problems developed. Lewis estimates he arrived at about 6:35 a.m. Pacific time, which was 9:35 a.m. Eastern, not long after the second plane struck the World Trade Center. As on other days, there was chatter on LAX security walkie-talkies, and he could easily hear what they were saying, sometimes both sides of the conversation. Lewis remembers, the first thing I noticed was the guards, and that day they were the LA World Airport Police, and the FBI were very upset and agitated because apparently no one from the FAA had notified NORAD, North American Aerospace Defense Command. They were making calls and demanding to know why not. Eventually, word came back that NORAD had indeed been notified, but they had been ordered to stand down. I personally know someone who was there when that happened. Then LAX security wanted to know who could have made that order. The word came back that it was from the highest level of the White House. Later on, watching television, I knew the order didn't come from Bush because he was reading My Pet Goat to the school kids in Florida. So the only other person it could be was Dick Cheney. It turns out there were some war games taking place that morning, September 11th, was the second day of the Vigilant Guardian, an exercise of the Joint Chiefs and NORAD that simulated planes being hijacked in the northeastern United States. Another drill called Northern Vigilance had shifted some fighter jets to Canada and Alaska to monitor Russian MiGs flying training missions. This one puts phantoms, quote-unquote phantoms, on military radar screens that would look real to the participants in the exercise. We fought many phantoms that day, Richard Myers of the Joint Chiefs later testified to Congress. But could the attack have been scheduled intentionally to coincide with those war games? If so, this raises a couple of questions. Either there was a major intelligence leak whereby the terrorists realized the war games would be good cover for their operation, or else some people in the administration knew of the attack ahead of time and let it proceed simultaneously, knowing the confusion this would cause. Between September 2000 and June 2001, on 67 different occasions, fighter jets were sent to intercept aircraft that had lost radio contact or their transponder signal or were flying off course, usually within 10 minutes of any sign of problem. Contrary to what some people think, presidential approval wasn't needed to intercept or even shoot down an aircraft. Then on June 1st, 2001, the existing hijacking response procedures were changed to require approval by the Secretary of Defense before responding to a situation with lethal force. And when the call came into the Pentagon on 9/11, nobody answered the phone. The stand-down order that Charles Lewis heard about was confirmed by none other than Norman Mineta, Transportation Security at the time. According to the 9/11 Commission, Cheney didn't arrive underground at the PEOC, the Presidential Emergency Operations Center, until almost 10 a.m. Mineta, however, said the vice president was already down there when he arrived at 9:20 a.m. Richard Clark and Cheney's photographer indicated the same thing. That was before the Pentagon had been hit, and Mineta recalled a young man coming into the PEOC three times to tell Cheney how far out the plane was from Washington. After the third report, according to Mineta, the young fellow asked, "Do the orders still stand?" And Cheney responded, "Of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything to the contrary?" The 9/11 Commission chose to ignore Mineta's testimony and went so far as to remove it from the video archive. Instead, they had Cheney ordering almost 45 minutes later that Mineta said the inbound aircraft to be shot down, except by then all four planes had already gone down. That was cover-up number one by the 9/11 Commission. Now let's look at whether it was actually those two planes that were responsible for the falling towers. I was amazed watching the 2007 version of the documentary Loose Change, which I urge everyone to see, at the many firefighters and other witnesses who talked about a whole series of explosions during the collapse of the building. That's what I just played for you before we started reading. All of this was reported on the news at the time. Before the South Tower collapsed, video footage clearly shows sizable amounts of white smoke starting to pour out at the base. There was described a, quote, giant rolling ball of flame, unquote, that came up from street level at an elevator that exploded on the 65th floor as someone stood beside it. A woman on the 49th floor seeing people with burns and broken arms in the stairwell. And this is in quotes, "For every window in the lobby to be exploding, it wasn't from the jet fuel, no way," according to one of the witnesses, and a whole lot more that did not jive with any planes striking the building. Barry Jennings, the city's emergency coordinator, was at the scene before and after the building collapses. Jennings puts it out there plainly, in quotes, "I know that what I heard explosions," end quote. For my TV show, I interviewed a witness named William Rodriguez, a janitor who happened to have a master key and rescued many people and got honored at the White House as a national hero. He says that shortly before American Airlines 11 struck the North Tower at 8:46 a.m., an explosion simultaneously rocked the building so hard it pushed us up, Rodriguez later testified behind closed doors to the 9/11 Commission. But his name was never mentioned in the report. Rodriguez also gave the commission and the FBI a list of 14 people who'd been with him, but not a single one was ever contacted. He produced his boss for us, who looked me right in the eye, in essence, told me the same story. What's happened to Rodriguez today? He's on the no-fly list. A guy who went back to save people and no regard for his own life. When he goes somewhere, he's pulled out of line, interrogated, and harassed. All because, I guess, he didn't give the proper testimony they wanted. Some people have argued that the Twin Towers went down within a half hour of one another because of the way they were constructed. Well, those 425,000 cubic yards of concrete and 200,000 tons of steel were designed to hold up against the Boeing 707, the largest plane built at the time the towers were completed in 1973. Analysis had shown that a 707 traveling at 600 miles an hour, and those had four engines, would not cause major damage. The twin-engine Boeing 757s that hit on 9/11 were going 440 to 550 miles an hour. Still, we are told that a molten, highly intense fuel mixture from the planes brought down these two steel-framed skyscrapers. Keep in mind that no other such skyscraper in history has ever been known to collapse completely due to fire damage. So could it actually have been the result of a controlled demolition from inside the building? I don't claim expertise about this, but I did work 4 years as part of the Navy's underwater demolition team, where we were trained to blow things to hell and high water. My staff talked at some length with a prominent physicist, Stephen E. Jones, who says that a gravity-driven collapse without demolition charges defies the laws of physics. These buildings fell at nearly the rate of a free fall, straight down into their own footprint in approximately 10 seconds. An object dropping from the roof of the 110-story tall towers would reach the ground in about 9.2 seconds. Then there's the fact that steel beams that weighed as much as 200,000 pounds got tossed laterally as far as 500 feet. The National Institute of Standards and Technology started its investigation in August 21, 2002. When their 10,000-page long report came out 3 years later, the spokesman said there was no evidence to suggest a controlled demolition. But Stephen E. Jones also says that molten metal found underground weeks later is proof that jet fuel couldn't have been all that was responsible. I visited the site about 3 weeks after 9/11 with Governor Pataki and his wife, Terry. It didn't mean anything to me at the time, but they had to suspend digging that day because they were running into heat pockets of huge temperatures. These fires kept burning for more than 3 months, the longest burning structure blaze ever, and this was all due to jet fuel? We're talking molten metal, more than 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Probably the most conclusive evidence about a controlled demolition is a research paper, 2 years, 9 authors, published in the peer-reviewed Open Chemical Physics Journal in April of 2009. In studying dust samples from the site, these scientists found chips of nanothermite, which is a high-tech incendiary explosive. Here's what the paper's lead author, Dr. Neil Tarried of the University of Copenhagen's chemistry department, had to say about the explosive that he's convinced brought down the Twin Towers and nearby Building 7. Thermite itself dates back to 1893. It is a mixture of aluminum and rust powder, which react to create intense heat. The reaction produces iron, heated to 2,500 degrees centigrade. This can be used to do welding. It can also be used to melt other iron. So, in nanite thermite, this powder from 1893 is reduced to tiny particles, perfectly mixed. When these interact, the intense heat develops much more quickly. Nanothermite can be mixed with additives to give off intense heat or serve as a very effective explosive. It contains more energy than dynamite and can be used as rocket fuel. Richard Gage is one of the hundreds of credentialed architects and structural engineers who have put their careers on the line to point out the detailed anomalies and many implications of controlled demolition and the building collapses. As he puts it bluntly, once you get to the science, it's indisputable. So what happened to the steel debris from the World Trade Center that might have backed this up? Well, for the most part, it was shipped overseas. The removal by four companies contracted by the city was carefully controlled and monitored. The building assessment performance team wasn't allowed to take samples. One firefighter who got dug out of the rubble on 9/11 said, "The one thing that always troubled me is why were they in such a hurry to remove all the evidence? Why did they take away everything from the site as fast and expediently as possible? I tried to talk to someone from the 9/11 Commission, but got turned down multiple times. They simply said, 'We stand by our report.' I also tried to speak with Mayor Giuliani, but he refused also. We recently learned through the DA of Manhattan's testimony in a court case that the city of New York did nothing to investigate 9/11. That tells me Giuliani was nothing but a straw man. Why is he paraded around as this big hero when he really had nothing to do with it other than being a figurehead?" Again, I asked what happened to state and local laws. Homicides are supposed to be investigated by the jurisdiction where they happen. Who has the power to suspend all those laws and make them irrelevant, turning it into an investigation completely controlled by the feds? Seems that they feel they're above us. We work now for the government, not the other way around. That's not the way this country was founded. I think we have a right to know who ran that investigation so we can properly critique it. I wanted to ask Mayor Giuliani specifically about the collapse of Building 7 late on the afternoon of the attacks. If all these buildings are falling as a result of fires, shouldn't we be changing the way we build them? In this case, you had Building 7 that wasn't struck by anything. I went to the BBC and I got the footage where a reporter is standing in front of it, incongruously saying that it's already come down almost a half hour before it did. I tried to talk to the reporter, but the BBC turned me down, explaining that day was extremely hectic and they're not part of any conspiracy. A few hours before the attack, for some reason, Building 7's alarm system went on test status. The power was shut off and all tenants evacuated after the second plane hit. People were reporting major fires on the east, north, and west faces that covered about six of the floors. One witness, Michael Hess, reported a major explosion on the sixth floor and being trapped for 90 minutes, two floors above that, until he was rescued by the fire department. Well, just like the Twin Towers, the 47-story Building 7 fell symmetrically into its own footprint in 6.5 seconds, sending the same type of pyroplastic cloud down the surrounding streets that demolition is known to cause. Keep in mind that other nearby buildings with much worse damage never collapsed. Not Building 3, which was split in half by the South Tower's debris. Not Building 4, otherwise almost completely destroyed. Not Building 5 or 6, which suffered severe fires and structure damage. They were much smaller than Building 7, where 81 columns all had to collapse due to fires on just a few floors. So why did Building 7 come down as it did? What's being covered up? I've got questions about the attack on the Pentagon also, getting back to Charles Lewis and what he heard that morning on the walkie-talkies out at LAX. The security guards referred to a quote-unquote missile having hit the Pentagon. I was kind of puzzled, Lewis said, because by the time the airport had been evacuated and I got home, the missile that had hit the Pentagon had mysteriously changed to being another airplane. I couldn't figure that out because I didn't take the FBI or the LA World Airport Police to be putting on a pageant for me. Of course, officially it was American Airlines 77 that crashed into the ground floor at 9:37 a.m., only a section of the Pentagon that had been reinforced to withstand a terrorist attack was hit. Anywhere else, the damage and casualties would have been much worse. Left behind by a plane 100-some feet wide was a hole 16 feet deep, but no evidence to accompany it, which is something that former Air Force fighter pilot Russ Wittenberg says he'd never seen happen. Captain Wittenberg also says that jet engines do not leave a trail of white smoke, as was seen at the Pentagon. We don't know what it was, but you can tell what it wasn't, according to Wittenberg, and he believes it wasn't a 757 aircraft. Another doubter is Major General Albert Stubblebine, retired commanding general of the U.S. Army Intelligence and Security Command, who was responsible for the Army's strategic intelligence sources worldwide. I have had a lot of experience looking at photographs, Stubblebine says. I don't know exactly what hit it, the Pentagon, but I do know from the photographs I have analyzed it was not an airplane. For one thing, if you look at the hole that was made in the Pentagon, the nose penetrated far enough so that there should have been wing marks on the side of the building. One person counteracted my theory and said, oh, you've got it all wrong. The airplane came across. One wing hit the ground and broke off, which is possible, but if I understand airplanes correctly, most of them have two wings. So there should have been a mark for the second one. Stubblebine also believes the Twin Towers were brought down by a controlled demolition. How could a Boeing 757 with its engines extending beneath its wings have struck the Pentagon so low without damaging the lawn or destroying the large cable spools on the ground in front of the damaged area, asked 9/11 expert David Ray Griffin, a California professor and the author of 8 books exploring the contradictions of the official 9/11 story. Griffin also cites the observation of Karen Kwiatkowski, then an Air Force lieutenant colonel employed at the Pentagon, who saw, quote, no airplane metal or cargo debris. Here's what troubled me. The law was immediately and completely broken there. They had military personnel out on the lawn cleaning everything up before an investigator ever arrived. Those hasty cleanups now seem to be standing operating procedure when it comes to assassinations and events like 9/11, don't they? Whenever there's a plane crash, things are strewn about. So where are the seats, the luggage, the wings, the vertical stabilizers, the engines? Were never fully recovered. A number of parts to a 757 are pretty much indestructible, but not a single piece was ever been possibly identified as originating with Flight 77. The Department of Justice had admitted to having 85 videos, but they refused a Freedom of Information Act request to release them. Another expert we communicated with is Colonel George Nelson, who during 30 years of commissioned service in the Air Force served as an aircraft accident investigation board member. Colonel Nelson says, with all the evidence readily available at the Pentagon crash site, any unbiased rational investigator could only conclude that a Boeing 757 did not fly into the Pentagon as alleged. In all my years of direct and indirect participation, I never witnessed nor even heard of an aircraft loss where the wreckage was accessible that prevented investigators from finding enough hard evidence to positively identify the make, model, and specific registration number of the aircraft, and in most cases, the precise cause of the accident. Then there's the background on the pilot. His name was Charles Chick Burlingame, and he was not only well-schooled in martial arts, but a retired Top Gun pilot, the best of the best. All his friends said there's no way he'd give up his plane. It wasn't in the man's makeup, unless the hijackers got to him and killed him. But with box cutters, supposedly a hijacker named Honjur got control of the plane, except later, his flight instructor described Honjur as barely being able to handle a single-engine Cessna a month earlier, and Flight 77 is said to have made a complicated 330-degree turn, dropping 7,000 feet, executing a maneuver that experienced pilots say is nearly impossible. The section of the Pentagon that was struck happened to be the headquarters for naval operations and intelligence, as well as housing quite a few accountants and budget analysts. Important Pentagon financial information disappeared in the aftermath of the attack. So it's quite a coincidence that just the day before, Defense Secretary Rumsfeld had announced publicly, in quotes, according to some estimates, we cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions. That's right, not million, not even billion, that was trillion. Flight 77 disappeared from the, that's out on YouTube, you guys. I've posted that on the Galactic Roundtable. That was from the CBS News the night before these attacks. Unbelievable. Flight 77 disappeared from the FAA radar screen at 8:56 a.m. when it made an unauthorized turn to the south somewhere near the Kentucky-Ohio border. The only evidence that plane was still flying and headed toward Washington were two phone calls that Ted Olson said he received from his wife Barbara on board not long before the Pentagon strike. Ted Olson was a longtime Republican operative who spearheaded the legal effort for Bush in Florida after the disputed 2000 election and then went to work in the Justice Department as Solicitor General. His wife was the only person who reported to have mentioned box cutters. According to Olson, she said that, quote, all passengers and flight personnel, including the pilots, were herded to the back of the plane by armed hijackers. Yep, 60-some people, including a weightlifter pilot, being held up by a short, slender guy holding knives and box cutters. I'm sorry, I have to laugh. Let me take a drink of water. At first, Olson said the calls were made from Barbara's cell phone, except high-altitude cell phone calls were pretty much impossible in 2001. Olson then changed his story to claim she'd been using an onboard phone to make a collect call, except American Airlines didn't have such phones on the Boeing 757s. Here's what the FBI reported in 2006 at the trial of Zacharias Moussaoui, the so-called 20th hijacker. Barbara Olson had made one call, an unconnected call that lasted 0 seconds. So what's going on? Captain Wittenberg has said that if Flight 77 was actually off the radar screen for 36 minutes, then it was no longer airborne. Did it land in some remote field while something else, maybe the missile Charles Lewis heard about at LAX, hit the Pentagon's financial records area? This probably sounds far-fetched, if not crazy. Until you consider that elements of our military had an eerily similar plan ready to roll back in the early 1960s. It was called Operation Northwoods, first described in a book published in 2001 called Body of Secrets by James Bamford. Operation Northwoods was approved by the Joint Chiefs of Staff for action against Castro's Cuba. This is what JFK was talking about in the video I played for you when we opened this call. What may be the most corrupt plan ever created by the U.S. government, as Bamford put it. The Kennedy brothers seemed to be going soft on Castro, so the generals came up with a number of terrorist schemes to launch a war. Bamford tells us among the most elaborate schemes was to create an incident which will demonstrate convincingly that a Cuban aircraft has attacked and shot down a chartered civilian airliner. An aircraft at Elgin Air Force Base would be painted and numbered as an exact duplicate for a civil registered aircraft. At a designated time, the duplicate would be substituted for the actual civilian aircraft and would be loaded with the selected passengers, all boarded under carefully prepared aliases. The actual registered aircraft would be converted to a drone, a remotely controlled unmanned aircraft. Take-off times of the drone's aircraft and the actual aircraft will be scheduled to allow a rendezvous south of Florida. From the rendezvous point, the passenger carrying aircraft will descend to minimum altitude and go directly into an auxiliary field at Elgin Air Force Base, where arrangements will have been made to evacuate the passengers and return the aircraft to its original status. The drone aircraft, meanwhile, will continue to fly the filed flight plan. When over Cuba, the drone will be transmitting on the internal distress frequency a Mayday message stating he is under attack by Cuban MiG aircraft. The transmission will be interpreted by destruction of the aircraft, which will be triggered by radio signal. If you are interested, you can read the whole plan on the website of the National Security Archive. Oh my. Now let's examine the anomalies around the last plane. United Airlines Flight 93 that crashed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, reported at 10:03 a.m. and 20 minutes away from Washington. The official story made me proud to be an American. The passengers overcame the hijackers and sacrificed their lives so that others might be spared. Back to Charles Lewis again at LAX that morning. They said fighter jets had been scrambled from two different military bases and that they had shot down the plane over Pennsylvania. And that was way before we got the hero story. The first news reports expressed surprise at how little debris was visible at the crash site. The Pennsylvania state website even said it was hard to believe that a 757 plunged into the ground with such force that it literally disintegrated and created a still smoldering crater in the ground. Then, 5 days later, CNN News reported, apparently another debris site that had been cordoned off 6 to 8 miles away. This, the commentator said, raises a number of questions. Why could it have been blown that far away? The FBI immediately took over the investigation and for a long time wouldn't honor family members' requests, asking if they could listen to the cockpit voice recorder. This was finally allowed on April 18, 2002, provided they'd agree not to reveal anything about what they heard. And for some reason, the last 3 minutes weren't on there. Barry Litchie, the mayor of the nearby town of Indian Lake, says he heard what sounded like a missile fire that morning. The military did admit some years later that it was tracking Flight 93, and a Colonel Robert Marr recalled hearing that, "We will take lives in the air to preserve lives on the ground." He then ordered the air controllers to have fighter jets intercept the plane, but supposedly the commercial flight crashed before that could happen. "Of course, we never fired upon the plane," said Dick Cheney. "We just witnessed an act of heroism." The official story is that for the first time in history, the black boxes were not recovered, not from any of the four planes. From the TV pilot I did about 9/11 on True TV, we spoke to a guy who knew about the existence of three black boxes. He physically saw one, and his partner saw two more. He says they were taken away in a black government van. Another thing I find very interesting, also for the first time in history, no attempt was made to reconstruct the planes with whatever parts they could find. They even did this with TWA Flight 800 that went down in 1996 in the Atlantic, and for that they had to dive down 1,200 feet. After Pearl Harbor, General Martin Short and some admirals were fired because of their alleged negligence. After 9/11, not a single employee at the FAA or NORAD got punished. In fact, all the major military men involved received promotions. They included General Richard Myers, who was named Chairman of the Joint Chiefs on October 1st. The way I see it, with all the advance warnings about a terrorist attack, a fair number of Bush's team should have gotten the axe. Except right up to the president himself, it was all about denial. Here was Bush in 2004. "Had I had any inkling whatsoever that the people were going to fly airplanes into buildings, we would have moved heaven and earth to save the country." Here was Rumsfeld testifying before the 9/11 Commission. "I knew of no intelligence during the 6+ months leading up to September 11 to indicate terrorists would hijack commercial planes, use them as missiles to fly into the Pentagon or the World Trade Center towers." And here is Condoleezza Rice. "This kind of analysis about the use of airplanes as weapons actually was never briefed to us." "Oh, really? What about the intelligence briefing Bush received on August 6, 2001 that was headed, 'Bin Laden determined to strike in U.S. and even mentioned possible hijackings,' or Condi Rice being warned about Al-Qaeda's plotting by then CIA Director George Tenet on July 10, 2001, but brushing him off? The 9/11 Commission was aware of this, but decided to leave it out of their report. The CIA's counterintelligence chief, C. Coffer Black, later felt there were things the Commission wanted to know about and things they didn't want to know about, Rice responded. "What I am quite certain of is that I would remember if I was told, as this account apparently says, that there was about to be an attack in the United States. And the idea that I would somehow have ignored that I find incomprehensible." Seems she stammered over her words a little. These were far from the only warnings. Israel sent two senior agents of the Mossad to Washington in August of 2001 to, quote, "alert the CIA and FBI of the existence of the cell of as many as 200 terrorists said to be preparing a big operation. 8 months before the attacks, French intelligence warned the U.S. in 9 different reports about, quote, airline hijacking plans by radical Islamists, unquote, connected to bin Laden and the Taliban. FBI agents working out of the Minneapolis and Phoenix offices tried to alert their superiors. Dr. Park Godfrey, an associate professor of computer science at Toronto's York University, said under oath in a New York courtroom that a longtime associate of his, Susan Lindauer, warned him several times and as late as August 2001, quote, that we expected a major attack on the southern part of Manhattan and that the attack would encompass the World Trade Center, unquote, an attack, quote, that would involve airplanes and possibly a nuclear weapon. Lindauer, who says she was a CIA asset, claimed to have made an attempt to inform John Ashcroft at the Justice Department, who referred her to the Office of Counterterrorism. Which brings us to the whole question of the 19 alleged hijackers. Did you ever wonder how our government came up with the identity so fast? Even before the last plane crashed, the FBI was telling counterterrorism official Richard Clark that they had a list of names. It took 2 years to get indictments on the Lockerbie bombing, but not this time. Except on September 16th, one of the supposed hijackers walked into the consulate at Saudi Arabia. He was actually a pilot for Saudi Airlines. On September 22nd, one of the Flight 11 hijackers announced he was alive and well. Two more Saudi pilots did the same thing the next day. On September 27th, CBS found hijacker Hamzi of Flight 77 working for an oil refinery in Saudi Arabia. No matter. All these guys are still on the list today as being among the perpetrators. What evidence do we have then? 2 days after the attacks, our government said it was clear-cut that Osama bin Laden was the man behind it all and that the Taliban in Afghanistan would soon be handing over its proof. 10 more days went by, at which time Colin Powell said he'd soon show us the documentation. Meanwhile, in 3 separate statements, bin Laden denied any involvement. On December 13th, the State Department released a video purporting to show him describing the attacks. But before long, a lot of people were questioning whether it was authentic. On the day after Christmas, a Taliban official said he'd attended Osama's funeral. But on the 27th of December came a bin Laden video praising al-Qaeda's successful hit on us. Another couple of years went by before a third tape surfaced. October 29th of 2004, a few days before the presidential election, that, you know, in parentheses, think heightened terror alert, with a blatant taking of full responsibility. However, as of June 6, 2006, the FBI said it had, quote, no hard evidence connecting bin Laden to 9/11. He's been charged with several crimes related to terrorist attacks, but not with 9/11. I find that very odd. Not one shred of evidence produced in a courtroom leads to the conclusion bin Laden spearheaded these attacks. The justice system that works for anything else is suddenly suspended over terrorism. We're led to believe that a hijacker's passports flew out of his pocket when his plane hit the tower, made it safely through 9,000 gallons of jet fuel, and landed to be found on a sidewalk 1,000 feet below. Another hijacker's ID supposedly turned up in the Pentagon wreckage, one of the few pieces that survived. Meantime, awaiting discovery in rental cars left behind at Boston Logan and Washington Dulles airports was enough evidence to convict, had they lived, an Arabic flight manual, a check made out to Phoenix flight schools, maps of Washington and New York, and more. Does this remind anyone else of Oswald leaving behind a paper trail to his purchase of the rifle, or James Earl Ray depositing his bundle full of incriminating evidence? Was first said to have left a rented Mitsubishi at Boston Logan, but that story was later changed into a blue or silver Nissan left in Portland, Maine. Didn't seem to matter which vehicle, because both were said to be filled with box cutters and other incriminating items. These guys were all made out to be fanatic Quran-toting Muslims ready to die for Allah in a holy war against America. Except in their final days, according to people who knew them, they were drinking, visiting strip clubs, soliciting prostitutes, and watching porno on the tube. Otta's girlfriend said he liked to snort cocaine. Otta seemed to be all over the place before 9/11, doing coke in Hollywood, Florida, living in Venice, Florida, near the NSA, and in Hamburg, Germany. Who some of the hijackers were really working for, at least once upon a time, first came out in media tidbits. From Newsweek in September 15, 2001, U.S. military sources have given the FBI information that suggests five of the alleged hijackers of the plane that were used in the terror attacks received training at secure U.S. military installations in the 1990s. Same day, New York Times, in quotes, the Defense Department said Mr. Otta had gone to the International Officer School at Maxwell Air Force Base in Alabama, Mr. Al-Omari to the Aerospace Medical School at Brooks Air Force Base in Texas, and Mr. Al-Ghamdi to the Defense Language Institute at the Presidio in Monterey, California. Well, our military school of the Americas once helped train the Central American Death Squads, so our providing lethal skills to quote-unquote, freedom fighters, should come as a huge surprise. But it gets stranger still. Two of the alleged hijackers rented an apartment from the actual and actually lived with FBI informants. The CIA had operational interests in two of them, Nawaz al-Hazmi and Khalid al-Midhar. FBI agents believed that the agency was protecting Midhar and Hazmi because it hoped to recruit them, or alternatively, that the CIA was running a joint venture with the Saudi intelligence, using them. The CIA goes way back with these guys. They were recruited into the secret war against the Soviets in Afghanistan back in the late 1980s. In fact, the term Al-Qaeda is said to have been invented by the CIA to designate a database of recruits into the Mujahideen. Michael Springman was head of the visa section at our embassy in Jeddah from 1987 to 1989, and he remembers granting visas to quote-unquote terrorists who'd been recruited by CIA and sent for training to America. Some of them fought in Bosnia during the 92 to 95 period. Springman can be seen in the documentary Zero, saying that many of the hijackers he read about in the LA Times were once on his visa list in Jeddah. He called the FBI a number of times, who Springman says responded, "We'll get back to you. 6 years later, I'm still waiting." Osama bin Laden himself started out helping the CIA in Afghanistan. In 2009, a former FBI translator named Sybil Edmonds dropped a bombshell. The U.S. said, she said, had kept up intimate relations with bin Laden all the way until the day of September 11th, using him sometimes for ops in Central Asia, including Xinjiang, China. The process Edmonds outlined involved the use of Turkey with assistance of actors from Pakistan and Afghanistan and Saudi Arabia as proxies, with those folks in turn employing bin Laden and the Taliban. The goals? Control of the huge energy supplies in Central Asia, for one. Maybe the reason we invaded Afghanistan? Sybil Edmonds testified for 3.5 hours to the 9/11 Commission, but it ended up being classified. Bin Laden, like 15 of the 19 alleged hijackers, came from Saudi Arabia. Back in October of 2003, an article in Vanity Fair had questioned the FBI's letting six planes of Middle Eastern nationals, most of them members of the Saudi royal family, fly out of the U.S. soon after 9/11. The 9/11 Commission concluded that after the Saudi government requested this out of the fear of their safety, the FBI had conducted a satisfactory screening of Saudi nationals who left the United States. But one of those planes stopped four times at different locations around the U.S. on September 19th, picking up half-siblings and other bin Laden relatives who supposedly had no connection to him. Finally, in 2007, a heavily censored FBI report said the plane was chartered either by the Saudi Arabian royal family or Osama bin Laden. Osama? You mean to tell me the ringleader of the 9/11 attacks might have been chartering a plane on our soil 8 days after this happened? It just gets curiouser and curiouser. In the words of Lewis Carroll from Alice in Wonderland, FBI Director Robert Mueller testified about how the terrorists managed to finance themselves, saying they'd had all their money wired in small amounts to avoid being detected, except it came out that General Mahmoud Ahmad, the head of Pakistan's ISI intelligence service, had ordered one of his agents a wire transfer of $100,000 American dollars to Mohammed Atta. The ISI and the CIA's relationship dates back to the 1980s when the Mujahideen got set up. Ahmed, as it happened, had come to Washington a week before the attacks for a meeting with the CIA chief, George Tenet, and some people from Bush's National Security Council. When the story came out about the wire transfer to Atta, Ahmed abruptly retired from the ISI. The families of many 9/11 victims have gone to court seeking evidence of the Saudi royal family's bankrolling of al-Qaeda. Senator Bob Graham wrote a book that discussed the 28-page section about Saudi Arabia and that the CIA, FBI, and NSA had blacked out of his committee's report. In the book, Graham noted ties between the hijackers and the Saudis, flatly stated that the White House was directing the cover-up to protect America's relationship with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Ever hear of an army project called Able Danger? It was established in 1999 as part of the Defense Department's Special Operations Command, according to Colonel Anthony Schaefer, a leading member of the team with the Defense Intelligence Agency. Able Danger was an offensive counterterrorism project which was designed to take and kill. The military term is reduce senior al-Qaeda leadership. It wasn't long before the Able Danger Squad uncovered al-Qaeda cells in the New York City area, one of whose members was Mohammed Atta. At least six witnesses later recalled seeing Atta's picture on a chart they'd drawn back in January of 2000. Turns out three more of the alleged hijackers had been ID'd by Able Danger before 9/11 as well. Colonel Schaefer worked closely with Navy Captain Scott Philpott and says he attempted to set up a meeting between Philpott's superior officer and FBI counterterrorism agents in D.C., so they could work together in following these cells. But three times the SOCOM lawyers kept a meeting from happening. Soon after that, Schaefer got transferred to a DIA project in Latin America. Then, after 9/11, he and Philpott tried to bring the story forward to Congress and the 9/11 Commission. In June of 2005, a report for a small-town Pennsylvania paper wrote a piece that opened with 2 years before the September 11, 2001 attacks, U.S. intelligence officials linked Mohammed Atta to al-Qaeda and discovered he and two others were in Brooklyn. You might think the national media would have jumped all over that, but they didn't. Eventually, the New York Times did a few stories, but when the 9/11 Commission came up with the reasons for leaving Able Danger out of its report, the media nodded off again. Chairman Thomas Keene went so far as to say that the recollections of the intelligence officers cannot be verified with any document. However, hence it didn't happen, and the Pentagon wouldn't let Schaefer or anyone else testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee. We talked to Schaefer while putting together this chapter. In his opinion, both the Clinton and Bush administrations were covering up their incompetence. The Department of Defense does not want to get blamed for making bad decisions, which resulted in information not being passed to the FBI, and therefore being a material factor in why 9/11 happened. He told us, "That's why you had DOD coming after me, because I blew the whistle. DOD has admitted there are 10,000 plus Able Danger documents, but they won't release a single one." To me, that's bizarre because most of the targeting information was done on the open internet and completely unclassified. It does make you wonder. 9/11 expert David Ray Griffin concluded that the commission and the Pentagon were covering up dangerous information that suggested Atta was being protected when we combine this observation with other things we have learned about the alleged hijackers, including the money reportedly sent to ADA by the CIA-created Pakistani ISI, the Able Danger evidence provides additional reason to suspect that the hijackers were really paid assets. I think Tank called the project for the New American Century, composed mainly of right-wing ideologues, wrote a report pre-9/11 titled Building America's Defenses. The document contains this line: the process of transformation, even if it brings revolutionary change, is likely to be a long one, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. We all know the results of 9/11, two unending wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. Remember the Gulf of Tonkin incident in 1964? We were told that American ships were attacked by the North Vietnamese. Now we know that the incident was manufactured by the Pentagon in order to gain support for escalating the Vietnam War. If the United States government was prepared to stage such a gargantuan event in leading our nation to war then, why would they refrain from doing so again today? Might we look at this as a trend, going into these wars under false pretenses? Richard A. Clark, National Coordinator for Security and Counterterrorism at the time, wrote in 2009 that Iraq was a move that many senior Bush officials had wanted to make before 9/11. While the Pentagon was still burning, Secretary of Defense Don Rumsfeld was in the White House suggesting an attack against Baghdad. Despite being repeatedly told that Iraq was not involved in 9/11, some, like Cheney, could not abandon the idea. The 9/11 Commission report states that the Bush administration had repeatedly tied the Iraq war to September 11. The panel finds no Al-Qaeda-Iraq tie. Bush then did some backpedaling, saying, this administration never said that the 9/11 attacks were orchestrated between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda. We did say there were numerous contracts, meetings, it turned out, between bin Laden and Iraqi intelligence that took place in Sudan back in the mid-1990s. But one prisoner, Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi, was tortured in 2002 until he agreed to say that Al-Qaeda was linked to Saddam. He died suddenly after being transferred from Egypt to another prison in Libya. The 9/11 Commission was a whitewash from the front after Bush and Cheney had stonewalled an investigation for more than a year. The fellow named as the first commission chairman was none other than Henry Kissinger, who said no thank you on December 13th of 2002 when told that he'd have to disclose his list of private business clients. Kissinger was also busy advising the Bush administration on how to go into Iraq. The commission's executive director ended up being Philip Zelikow, who got a jump on the game by putting together a detailed outline of the final report just as they were starting to investigate. The outline was kept secret from the others on the 80-member staff. Zelikow decided everything. After all, back in 1998, he'd co-written an essay on catastrophic terrorism, which he foresaw would be a watershed event in American history. Like Pearl Harbor, this event would divide our past and future into before and after. The United States might respond with draconian measures, scaling back civil liberties, allowing wider surveillance of citizens, detention of suspects, and use of deadly force. Sound familiar? Zelikow had also been principal author of a paper aiming at justifying a preemptive strike on Iraq, and he tried, without success, to insert a sentence into the report suggesting repeated communication between Al-Qaeda and Iraq. Zelikow happened to leave off his resume the fact that, at Condi Rice's request, he'd been part of the Bush transition team. But then he'd co-authored a book with Rice, too. Zelikow engaged in surreptitious communications with Karl Rove in the course of the investigation. With Zelikow running the show, there was no hope that the commission could carry out an impartial investigation. It recently came out that there were minders from Bush's team sitting there with the witnesses, answering questions for them and positioning themselves physically in an intimidating manner. The 9/11 Commission politely informs us that conspiracy theories play a peculiar role in American discourse. Whenever there is a particularly surprising, traumatic, and influential moment in our history, people are left with unsettling questions. As an example, they go on to cite that conspiracy theorists who propagate outrageous notions that Kennedy was assassinated by the CIA or some shadowy secret society of the rich and powerful. Outrageous notions? I find it outrageous that yet another government-appointed commission allows itself to become part of a cover-up, especially when they knew damn well that's what they were doing. The 10-member commission in a secret meeting at the end of its tenure in summer of 2004 debated referring the matter to the Justice Department for criminal investigation, according to several commission sources. Staff members and some commissioners thought that emails and other evidence provided enough probable cause to believe that military aviation officials violated the law by making false statements to Congress and to the commission. The 9/11 commission's chairman, Thomas Keene, and vice chair Lee Hamilton have since come out and said the recent revelations that the CIA destroyed videotape interrogations of Al-Qaeda operative leads us to conclude that the agency failed to respond to our lawful request for information about the 9/11 plot. Those who knew about those videotapes and did not tell us about them obstructed our investigation. Now we know from the new book by senior counsel John Farmer that almost every person involved in the official version of 9/11 lied about the events of that day. Our country has changed since 9/11. We've been frightened into half. The people saying torture's okay now, if it prevents terrorism. Americans are marching in the streets to try to stop someone who's sick from going to the doctor. But where is the outcry now that it's been proven that the whole Iraq war was trumped up? Maybe something stopped in all of us on 9/11, and we're struck back there collectively and cannot truly move forward until we have a new independent investigation to get to the bottom of what really happened. The 9/11 truth movement has a growing number of groups: political leaders, architects and engineers, firefighters, lawyers, medical professionals, pilots, religious leaders, scholars, scientists, journalists, and other media. That's me. Ha ha ha. And veterans. Check them out online. Get involved, as I have. But if you challenge the status quo, be prepared for retaliation. That's funny. That's what seems to have happened to Charles Lewis, the man with whom we began this chapter's revelations. After he noticed another lapse at LAX as quality control manager, this time observing a Saudi Airlines 747 disembark a host of passengers into the cargo area, his security clearance got revoked. He's currently unemployed. That ends the chapter on 9/11 in Jesse's book, and thank you, everybody. I have peace now that I could share that with you, and thank you, Jesse, for everything. Rama, do you have a song?
Okay, Rama was upstairs finding some more hot stuff since you mentioned it. Oh my God, there's a lot of stuff we found.
Thank you.
Ray Griffin has some new information.
Rama, I was just wondering if you could find Michael Franti, Let's Don't Give Up on This World.
Oh, you want me to play that?
Oh, please, yes. We could use a few seconds break, a transition.
Okay.
I like you. Music for transition time, yes.
Okay.
Now, I know why they won't let him play, talk about that. He's put it all out there in his book.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. It'll hit the fan. You're starting the ball rolling. Okay, everybody out there, get busy in your local area and
Talk this one to the hilt. Yeah.
And buy the book and read it.
Mm. I'm getting there. It's taking a moment.
I understand. Thank you.
And they did put something out about Jesse Ventura being censored in his 9/11 commentaries.
On which occasion?
Oh, let's see. This was back on March 14th, so that must have been the first one, huh? Let's see, the following column by former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura was removed. Oh, this is the thing that was removed by the Huffington Post.
Right.
After it was published March 9th and replaced with a note that states that the site prohibits the promotion and promulgation of conspiracy. You see, it's all...
I found that article and it got posted on the Galactic Roundtable.
I know. I'm just saying he printed it out again just in case anybody wants to hear it.
Oh, good. That's good.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here we go.
Wait.
Oh.
Okay.
Thank you, Ron.
Was greener years ago. I swear we used to grow here, but no more here. Tell me why on this hill all the birds they used to come to fly here, come to die here. And tell me why I need to know. Sometimes I wish I didn't have to know. Hey, world, what you say? Just go on for another day or two. Don't give up on me, I won't give up on you. Just believe in me, I believe in you. Tell me why on the corner all the kids that used to come to run here load their guns here. And tell me why it's okay to kill everything with a God to pray. Tell me who said it's okay to die in the name of the lies we say. Tell me why the child soldier. Tell me why they close the borders. Tell me how to fight diseases. Tell me now. The only thing I want to do is to be in the arms of someone who believes in me. Like I believe in you. And I say, care about what you say. Just to go on for another day. Care about what you say. Just to go on for another day. Care about what you say. Just to go on for another day. To learn. Don't give up on me. I won't give up. Okay, what you say.
My, my, my.
Thank you, Rama.
Yeah, it kind of says it all. Why do child soldiers have to load their guns on the corner?
Why do mothers and children have to be thrown on the back of a truck who were just bombed so they could be buried?
That's right. And right now, I'm happy to say, as of this month into May, Dr. David Ray Griffin is nailing the hammer.
Nailing the nail with
That's
the hammer.
Right.
The hammer of Allah. Oh, they'll just love that. Remember,
That's
Allah
right.
means God, the goddess, everybody.
He is going on a tour around the country. Maybe show up in your town, Dad. There's a whole group of folks called We Are Change, and they have a place right there in Minnesota and Michigan. WeAreChange.tv.
Oh, you should go look at that sometime.
They have 21 episodes of We Are Change, and all of this is tied in with 911inquiry.org or .com. It's on there.
On here.
Yeah. David Ray Griffin is on a book tour or a speaking tour from right now, April into May, dealing with this. Why Afghanistan?
911inquiry.org in care of Global Outlook.
Yes.
Oh, okay. You want me to read this? Toronto. The Toronto 9/11 Truth Community. Oh. Is presenting two world-renowned independent researchers of the attacks of 9/11, Dr. David Ray Griffin and Richard Gage, AIA, what's that symbol? On the evening of May the 2nd, 2010, AIA. Do you know that Alien Intelligence Agency?
Wouldn't that be cool?
Dr. Ray Griffin is professor of philosophy of religion and theology, emeritus at Claremont School of Theology and Claremont Graduate University. Isn't it interesting? We're listening to the clerics that are really true ones now.
Is it AIA.org?
I don't know. I said it's 911inquiry.org.
Yeah, but
in care of Global Outlook.
Oh.
And this is just the three letters after his name, so I was wondering what that meant.
Oh, I don't know.
He is the author of 36 books, nine of which are on 9/11.
American Institute of Architects.
Okay, that's older.
Right.
His most recent book, it's not so different because, you know, the Freemasons and all the magic there, and that it really has to do with builders of form.
Right.
True form, like all those churches on the Rose Line. Oh, my God. The Mysterious Collapse of the World, his most recent book is The Mysterious Collapse of World Trade Center 7. Why the Final Official Report About 9/11 is Unscientific and False. He was twice nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize, 2008 and 2009, and was ranked in 2009 in September by Britain's venerated New Statesman as the number 41 of the 50 people who matter today. Recently featured in major documentaries on the BBC and CBC, Griffin will be speaking on the legal and moral aspects of the war in Afghanistan. Wow. Lucky people in Toronto. Due to the carefulness and sweep of his writings, Griffin is widely considered the world's leading critic of the official story of 9/11. Richard Gage, AIA, is a San Francisco Bay Area architect and a member of the American Institute of Architects. He has been a practicing architect. He has been a practicing archi- A doesn't go in there. The practicing architecture for over 20 years and has worked on most types of building construction, including numerous fireproof steel-framed buildings. Although it is widely reported that the destruction of the World Trade Center occurred as a result of the impact of jetliners and the ensuing fires, Mr. Gage and over 1,100 professional architects and engineers listed at AE911truth.org, that's capital A, capital E, 911truth.org, maybe go check it out, Beth, yeah, have signed a petition that claims there is sufficient doubt about the official story to justify reopening the investigation into 9/11. Mr. Gage's presentation will be focused on reviewing data gathered by government reports, videos of the collapses, and eyewitness accounts. He was recently featured on the CBC's flagship documentary series, The Fifth Estate, and was described as lucid by the National Post. Special attention to professional architects in Ontario. This lecture will count as self-directed learning under the Ontario Association of Architects. Wow! Now that's the way to document this in front of the world. What do you say to that, everybody? See, we're going to do this in a civilized world. I'll be darned. Maybe we can show ourselves to be a civilization after all.
Right. Wouldn't that be... We got callers here.
Continuing education program and seats will be issued for attendance.
What callers do we have?
Alan from Oakland is on line one, but there's Paul from San Francisco. I don't know if he's still there.
That was an hour ago.
Also,
I didn't see. I was reading a book.
I know.
And Rama was up scouring on the computer, and I was in the kitchen. I'm sorry. Okay, but we can listen. We're all...
Anybody who wants to add information or ask a question, please call us, 415-762-1161. Thanks, guys, for calling us.
Am I on?
Hi, yep. Al.
Can anybody hear me? Can anyone
Hi.
Hear me?
Greetings,
Hello.
Sir.
Hello.
Hi. Hello, Tara, Rama, and Beth. It's Alan. Am I on?
You're on, dude.
Yes, you
oh.
are. Can't you
okay,
hear
hey, I want to thank the Galactic Roundtable and, you know, Beth. That was a really nice read from Jesse. And, you know, you folks have just got through talking about that Truth Commission coming out in San Francisco, and I wanted to make a small little entry here, and I wanted to thank David Icke also, too, because, you know, he came out with Alice in Wonderland, while the official version of 9/11 is a monumental lie, and I think that book came out 600-something pages in, I don't know, 2005, I don't know, maybe late 2004, whatever, but I was reading it at the beginning of 2006, and at that time it was the definitive compiled version, and that whole book was pretty much, well, it included a whole lot of other stuff, because you gotta see the big picture, but this was, I don't know, what, 5 years ago, 4.5 years ago. But, you know, it's just another wonderful example of everybody throwing stones into the pond and the ripples and people building on it, and it's morphed into what it is today.
Tara, I'm trying to hear Alan, but I can't hear him.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were muted. I'm very sorry.
It's okay. Go ahead, Alan. Go back to
okay. You know, and you folks are profiling a lot of people that had – small parts, but no part is small, and a lot of them are not here now, and but you know, it's amazing that a guy like David Icke is still around, and it seems like, I don't know, the destiny of people's lives, some people get the protection no matter what they do. And some people have to leave. But, you know, I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank all of you folks and to thank all the White Knights and just the regular people, too, or everyone, because everything everyone did contributed to where we are now. And, like I said, a lot of them have done their roles. They're not here anymore. So I wanted to take this opportunity to thank all of you for your courage and your love and your compassion and your heart. And with much gratitude, I pass the talking stick.
Alan, that's a beautiful point. Thank you. It takes a great compassion now. This is time to love the whole situation, see it for what it was, and know that that time is past us now.
Oh, my.
Yes?
Thank you, Alan. I just have to say, I mean, know what it's like living in Oakland and San Francisco. And in 1967, 68, 69, it wasn't pretty with the mood of the nation. After they lost JFK, Martin Luther King, and Bobby Kennedy Sr., I mean, we were upset. And to this day, it is still going on with the issues about equality because of your skin color. And what if it was reversed in the sense of the understanding? It's not about skin color, it's about species. And we're dealing with folks from other realities, other times, other dimensions that don't look like us but share just as much love. This is how we bridge the gap and heal it within ourselves, and then we can heal it with other secret societies that aren't so secret, just our world leaders who aren't being leaders. They're being followers to a false god called Lucifer, and I pass the talking stick.
I want to leave some hope here because there's, I think I should read on with this article.
Oh, Tara, we have a caller now.
Oh, okay.
Thanks. Aaron, hi, from Atlanta. Hi, Aaron. Now I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, the other day I went to see a movie called The Most Dangerous Man in America. And it was about Daniel Ellsberg and the Pentagon Papers.
Oh, boy.
And, yeah, and it showed how we got led into the Vietnam War and how they kept it going, all the lies that were told. And you could see the correlation between that and what went on after 9/11 and to lead us into the wars that we're in now. So if anybody gets a chance to see it, you know, please go see it.
What's the name of it again?
It's called The Most Dangerous Man in America.
See that movie.
Hey, should we go take ourselves?
Is this a new release? I didn't hear about this one.
Well, it was only here just this past week. I mean, it only stayed here a week. It left here Thursday, so I don't know where it might be showing in other cities. And it was only in one little theater, so you might have to really search it out.
Oh, thank you, Aaron, for telling me about that. I'm going to look it up and I'll post it.
Okay, and I think they have a website, but I'm not sure what the website is.
Oh, that's okay. I will find it. Thank
it's
you.
On free okay, speech.
Oh, Karen, thank you for bringing that up because, you know, Daniel Ellsberg, we used to put Snapchat at the back of every report of Daniel Ellsberg with Sybil Edmonds.
Yeah.
And he said about Sybil, he said, it was a cakewalk what I did. And compared to what this lady experiencing right now.
Yeah.
Last August, we haven't heard another thing about that.
Oh, well, it's, yeah, but see, now See, now we're all remembering, oh, yeah, that was a whole year ago. That's the same thing they did with Valerie Plame. And, you know, all the way through August and September, everybody's going, wow, wow, wow. And then, bango, not a word. And yet now, you know, you're going to watch the repetition because they had Daniel Ellsberg. When was that when we were house-sitting up in? Years ago, I mean, 2006. The whole thing was up there. And then I always watch this on Amy, too. She archives it.
Yeah.
And then when it's time to approach the main thing, which is, you know, this is the way the king put it. He said, Valerie Plame is the smoking gun to the smoking gun of 9/11 on the morning which Nisara was supposed to be announced.
That's interesting.
And just want to make sure everybody knows that the men and women on the first floor, above and below, in both buildings, were on that day shot point blank in the head, and they were buried. I mean, they were piled on top of each other in these humongous tents in a park, a block down the road. And a friend of ours, let's just say that we send every bit of love to a lot of sisters and brothers who told something of a story that they have been, since they've told it, you might say, in hiding.
Yeah, to this day.
And what Carol Davis, she was bringing on the lady with the water issues and all the pipes underneath. They have added these, you know, these bypasses to all the intersections so that when they're ready, they're going to do it that way.
Janet Phelan has come on Tom Hartman, and she is a investigative journalist who was working for the Santa Monica newspaper, and they basically killed her life, and she became homeless, lost her job, everything, and she's been on the run. And this is one of our brave whistleblowers, and she talks about the entire water system across this nation, where at a switch, they can just poison the water system like the mass murderers they are.
Yes.
And they won't do that, though. Ashtar has it under control.
Daniel Ellsberg came on Amy a little while ago, not too long ago, maybe 2 months ago or a month and a half ago. And one thing he said is you know, the one thing that he said it all the time. He said, I waited 5 years. I mean, he said, I knew things that, and I mean, he knew that he would be going somewhere where he wouldn't be coming back in terms of what was that worth. And I mean, he said, now, we are how many years since 9/11?
Nine
years.
Mm.
Wow.
9 years of war in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
That's disgusting.
And it's about the stargates, not about oil or Mr. Osama bin Laden and the whole idea of Taliban and Al-Qaeda.
And Valerie Plame's husband, Joe Wilson, and Rama, in this little town, went through a little ride experience all the way up the mountain there. In that, yeah, we'll just say,
yeah,
in his vehicle with the, you know, other vehicle following and listening to every single word. And Joe just says, this is for your protection and mine. And now I'm, you know, let's have a discussion. He said, I had a little visit with Saint Germain before coming back.
Ooh.
And I have a message for you from Saint Germain. And I'm here to tell you.
I'm here to tell you that Nisara is coming to pass. And what is coming up here is the total exposure of these 13 families to this day. And
he said that there were, and he said it, that there were between, and that was 2006. It was between 1 and 2 million United States soldiers dead already by then.
Yes.
And he said when all is said and done, it will be somewhere between 4 and 5 million Iraqis are dead.
Yeah.
And we didn't get to anything further than that.
Mm-hmm. And it's still to this day. Valerie Plame has written a book called Fair Game, where in reality we're all fair game. And that is why Mother, the great AWA, has returned and said, enough. Big Will, line one. Hello?
Big Will, are you there? Hello?
Can you hear me?
You're really muffled, Big Will. You got to get in a clear space somehow.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Can you hear me, Tara?
Yes, I can. Thank you, Big Will.
Okay, thank you. All right, my question is to Rama. Rama, what do you know about this secret meeting between Russia and Iran with President Obama over this weekend? I passed the talking stick.
Woohoo. Thank you, Big Will. You always come
for,
up with a hump digger.
Yeah, because it reminded me of what I was told today, that secret meeting has to do with a talking to with the Iranian issue where it's trying to flare up again, where John McCain is trying to sing the Beach Boys song, Bomb Iran, and it's about nothing but rhetoric where Iran is the gateway to the jinn, and it's the understanding that the jinn are the true story here that Dr. Daniel Pearl went to go and find out about. Daniel Pearl, I didn't mean to change the subject, but it brings it back to this story. 9/11, Osama, all the issues that brought us into Afghanistan. The jinn are the guardians at the gate. Stargate, that's what it's about. The jinn help you go through the Stargate. As you honor them, you enter the gate of heaven. And it's not a negative thing, it's a transformational thing. And this is the key here. All the kingdoms are back to heal this.
Oh, my God. Look, Rama. Look at that face on
that. That has to do with Archangel Raziel.
Yes. And this is about fire. The Hopi prophecy speaks about that this change at this time would be by fire. And it would be in the understanding. It's not the fire from the sun, per se. It's the fire of Mother, the great eye of Ra. And she comes and she burns the land to get rid of the filth, which is called that which is not of the office of the Christ. Mm-hmm. And some people could interpret it as there are solar flares going on right now to the level where Mr. Mitch Batros is predicting on December 21st. I don't know if he is actually saying it, but there are many out there saying that on December 21st, 2012, there will be such a solar flare that it would come from the sun and it would wipe out most of the communication on the planet, and it could be reinterpreted as fire from the sky. But I do believe Ashtar and Sananda would not let that happen. And I have to take it to that level. I hope that answers your question, Big Will. I think they're talking about all of these things right now.
They're talking about it all and more. Rama, he brought another one here from the WikiLeaks video. And the WikiLeaks video of left to right, Dick Cheney, George W. Bush, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, and Madeleine Albright, and they all look like they just swallowed about 200 frogs, especially Condoleezza Rice. Look at that.
I saw that picture.
They all know that they are done for now. There they are, the people who brought you every bit of the action in WikiLeaks video.
And we love them even more.
And all of the other horrors flowing from invasion of Iraq. Madeleine Albright, Madeleine Albright talked directly to Rama and talked about this, and she said she knows she's going bye-bye. She told him that in same year, 2006, that long ago, everybody. Ah, Madeleine Albright, former Clinton Secretary of State, is a good place to start from 60 Minutes. And then it goes out, well, Leslie saw U.S. sanctions against Iraq. We have heard that 500,000 children have died. I mean, that's more children than died in Hiroshima. And you know, is the price worth it? Children. Oh. Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, I think this is a very hard choice. Yet the price, we think the price is worth it. That's right. And an exhaustive study found that 227,000 children under 5 died during the George W. Bush and Bill Clinton regime of total sanctions against Iraq from 1990 through 2000. That's when, you remember, Bill Clinton formed a monarchy in 1990 with Bush Sr. to take out the Queen, basically. They were in a war. Sarah Collar? Okay, we'll continue later.
Laura from Seattle, line B2.
Thank you,
Hi,
Laura.
May
have skipped Earl.
Oh, yeah. Earl. I'm sorry.
Laura, hold on there. First is Earl. Hi, Earl.
Hey, Beth.
How are you?
Oh, good. Glad you can make it tonight.
Hi, Earl. I'm sorry I missed you there.
That's okay, Rama. That's okay.
I have an extensive, very large organic garden, and it got planted in. The crop got planted in yesterday, and that's kind of important. It takes about 10 hours, and if I don't do it, I won't have food this summer.
It sounds like you've been playing Farmville on Facebook, which I do play, so... this link in that reference. I signed up last night for disclosure.tv.
Oh, yeah.
And I was looking at this one group of videos about how, America got hijacked and all that. But I forgot about it, that George Bush actually used almost the same speech that Hitler gave for the, for the war on terror and for, it's almost the exact same speech with some different words put in.
Mm.
The Reichstag fire, or... Hmm.
I think so, but it was right after Hitler burned down his own parliament.
Yes, that was the Reichstag.
That was the Reichstag fire. The burning down of the parliament was called the Reichstag fire, Earl.
Like their 9/11.
Yeah, they did the same thing. Yeah. What were you going to say about that?
Well, I would just think it's something funny. It's almost like one of those infomercials, from the people that brought you this one product, now they bring you this one product, but it's almost the exact same product.
Yeah, exactly. A repeat of history.
I do think that Earl, bringing that up, that brings up Naomi Klein in my mind because she really taught the people well. She's done a really good job in her disaster capitalism combined with, what was that?
Shock doctrine,
yeah. And I have a half hour, I think, of her, too, on that. Maybe we should play that again sometime. But right now, 9/11 is coming up through WikiLeaks. That's what I see.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and one more thing before I go. When I was leaving the table to come back to my room to get back on the call, my mother's computer shut down and restarted on its own.
Hmm. That's weird.
I was like, that's not supposed to happen.
A little bit of wonky energy there.
I think, and when I talk to other people, I'm like, Tara Mama, right, we are in 2012. How can, we had about four or five earthquakes all in the first half of the, year, and we had this supposed meteor that, it's like, come on, end this volcano. Like, seriously, something is...
Something's up in the zoo.
Yep.
It is.
Yep. Anyway, I'll pass the talking stick, and nice reading, Beth, of the, from Jesse Ventura's book.
Oh, I'm
even
glad
you
enjoyed it.
Firefighter.
I sure enjoyed sharing it. Thank you.
Imagine where we got to go for helping everybody to really get on this page right now. Everybody on the same page. That's big, big move.
Beth and Laura, let me interrupt here just for a moment. This is Marita. I'm having several calls from people that want to know what time the Ashtar on the Road free call is, and at 7 p.m. Eastern, and the phone number is 712-432-0075. That's
it's
the regular phone number.
Starting now, right, Marita?
Pardon?
It's starting now.
One hour from now. And there was a little confusion because the time got set out incorrectly, so I think that's why I've had so many calls. But 712-432-0075, and the PIN code is 389-671-POUND. That's 389-671-POUND. And that's an hour from now. So just... some people thought they were supposed to be on now, and I had several calls here, and I told them we would announce it so that maybe clear up the confusion. So thank you for interrupting.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much, Marita.
And so, thank you, Laura, for letting me interrupt.
Anybody who hasn't ever been to an Ashtar call, because it normally costs $10 per call, this is an excellent, excellent day to listen to Ashtar. It would be well worth it to call in and get that free call.
Oh, yes, it's worth it. It's really triple worth it, everybody. That's just great. I was going to say that...
And don't forget about Laura here. I interrupted. I butted in front of her. So we do have her from Seattle online, too.
Thank you, Maria. Laura, hi. How are you?
Hi, Beth. Hi, Tara, Rama, and Marietta. I was wondering if you knew anything about the Polish president's plane crash, because there's a video going around of somebody coming up to it right after it crashed, and you hear four gunshots in the video.
Can you say that again, Laura? I didn't get that.
Sorry. Okay. In the Polish president's plane crash, somebody videotaped coming up to the plane crash. They were, like, on foot, walking up to it, and they're showing the footage of the crash and the fire and everything, and you can clearly hear four gunshots going off.
Whoa.
In the video.
Oh, great. Now I wonder who's not here.
Right. So I just wondered if you guys knew anything about that.
That's weird because, everyone was dead on impact, right?
I don't know.
Why would they be shooting a gun?
or not.
I know.
Well,
that's
maybe,
what I don't understand.
Maybe not everybody
Nobody
was dead, and that's why they wanted to make sure.
That's what I got from watching it, because there isn't, you know, nobody's really knows, because the video didn't show, they didn't come, they were kind of a little bit at a distance. So they didn't show, you know, people with guns shooting anybody, but you can clearly hear their gunshots.
I don't know.
Okay, I just was curious.
I'll tell you what. If you think it's bad, it's worse. That's how much this is real now, everyone.
Laura, where did you see that video?
It was on YouTube. You can,
What did it get called?
Polish presidents, what was it? I think you can actually just, Google Polish presidents, YouTube clip with gunshots. I mean, you probably can, because there was quite a few of them.
Gotcha. Wow.
It was all over the place, actually. Okay. Well, I wondered about that. I was kind of going, whoa, you know, wanted to know.
That is a whoa.
I know. So, okay. Well, that's all I have to say. So I'll pass the talking stick. But thank you guys for what you're doing. Thank you so much. I love
you
all. All right. Okay. Bye.
Well,
we do have Sarah from Texas on line one.
Oh, thank you. Sarah, hi. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Hello, everyone. I just had a comment about something. After, Beth, you were reading, I was online looking for this film back, I guess, about within the last 6 months. Let me just say, when I experienced 9/11, I was watching Good Morning America and followed the news through Diane and that show. And then within the last 6 months, there was a show that came in, I think, on a cable station, and it was about 9/11, and I wasn't sure if I really wanted to watch it. But I did. I started watching it, and it was the report through Channel 4 with Katie Couric, and I remember thinking how flat her voice sounded. You know, everybody that was reporting on that station just sounded like really business as usual, like there was no emotion in their voice or anything. So just a little while ago, I thought, I want to see if it still sounds that way to me. So I found this little clip on YouTube, and I stopped it because I want to play just a few seconds. I thought this was
kind of
interesting in light of what we're talking about.
Thank you,
so,
Sarah.
Hold on 1 second.
Okay.
This is Katie Couric talking right after this quote-unquote terrorism expert is reporting, and this is just after both planes have hit. Okay,
Thank you. Hold on.
Cool. Way to me. So I found this little clip on YouTube.
Uh-oh.
And I stopped it because I want to play just a few seconds. Sorry about that. Okay, here we go.
Mr. Johnson, obviously we were completely stunned when about 25 minutes after the first explosion or after the first plane crashed into
Did you catch that?
Towers,
yes, when the first explosion plane.
Uh-huh. She said about 25 seconds after the first explosion, and then she caught herself.
Oh,
I thought that was kind of interesting.
Email me that clip.
Pardon?
Email me that clip, Sarah.
Okay.
Please?
I'll do it. Thanks. I just wanted to pass that on.
Very good work. Thank you.
All right. Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to make the comment that when Katie Couric was doing that, she was working in a New York studio, and you know, these people knew people who had died that day, and they were people who walked up and down in Lower Manhattan all the time. And, you know, I'm one of the people who stood on top of the World Trade Center, you know, and looked out over all of Manhattan thinking, you know, it's great to be an American. And the New York crew, you know, it crushed their hearts so much that day. And California, you know, it's a different experience, and they're a little bit removed from it. And in New York, everybody local is talking about it, so it was a little bit different scene. What were you saying, Tara?
I forgot. I was going to say, because I've been kind of really looking, like, at the individuals in this picture on the front of the WikiLeaks, and oh my gosh, it's just, you know, like
that's
looking
a video.
Right into their soul.
That's a video. I can
this
play.
Is?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe we should play it.
It's pretty.
Oh well, yeah. We should play it, and I was going to maybe read the finish of this because there's. Just in case someone's on the line, you just let me know. My eyeballs will be over here. But others carry much, let's see, an exhaustive study, and then Albright is distinguished as the most direct spokesmodel for senseless death and suffering that characterized our engagement with that battered country. But others carry much greater responsibility. The Bush administration had top secret plans to invade Iraq as early as February 2001. First-hand witnesses, well, we went back to 1999, right, and 1996, Carlyle Group, and actually they were already doing
Mr.
it in 1988.
James Baker.
Yes, sir.
He is a very evil man.
Not to mention the plans were laid in 1946, everybody. Oh boy, you just you got to see how much people can take at a time. Albright, okay. So, but others carry much greater responsibility. The Bush administration had top secret plans. First-hand witnesses in the pre-war White House were unable to name a point when the decision to invade was made. It was a fait accompli. Prior to the war authorization from Congress, the various intelligence agencies submitted a report that claimed Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. Many nations had weapons of mass destruction. The report had to find that Iraq was an imminent danger to the United States. Here's the finding, quote, Iraq probably would attempt clandestine attacks against the United States homeland if Baghdad feared an attack that threatened the survival of the regime were imminent or unavoidable, or possibly for revenge, unquote. Key judgments, October 2002, National Intelligence Estimates. And that NIE is clear. Invading Iraq was a potential trigger for an attack on the United States by Iraq. Is there someone else?
Were you going to say something, Beth? I wasn't sure. No, I heard noises. That's why I wasn't sure.
Oh, noises.
When you came back downstairs, I wasn't sure if you saw the video that, I mean, listened to the video that Sarah brought us.
Oh, I heard it from upstairs.
Which video?
That Katie Couric said explosions. I mean planes.
Yeah, she screwed up because she said first.
Oh, ooh.
Sarah's going to send it to me, and I'll post it.
I didn't see that one. The only thing I did see was that from London, they were reporting ahead of time that the Tower 7 was going down, and it hadn't gone down yet.
That's right.
I heard it. It was right in my face.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
God.
I posted pictures of the Pentagon, from the BBC News from September 12th, and there's no airplane wreckage anywhere. Aerial shots.
No, that's right. And you know, the people that were on that plane landed in the next airport over in the next state. Was that Cleveland or something, yeah.
Ohio.
And Cleveland, Ohio. And they escorted them into a witness protection program. And the plane was all changed around and fixed up for some other airline or something, and off they went. And the other planes were taken over the border, the ones that were supposedly have hidden. And you remember you were listening when they, that those planes were not, according to Jesse, when you were reading, Beth, he said they were only going 400 or 500 miles an hour. And the other one was going 600 miles an hour, even though it was an A, what was it, an A, a 707? Mm-hmm. Oh, you were breaking up there, Beth.
They were 757.
757, which was the largest plane.
No, it was a two-engine.
No, they said it had four engines.
Oh.
They did. I heard him say, you read it. I heard you read it.
This is what it said. It said that the building was built, it was designed to withstand a hit by a plane, I don't know what model, with four engines going at 600 miles per hour, but that these were 757s with two engines going 400 or 500 miles an hour, so it was less than what it was built for.
Oh, I didn't hear that second part.
And that if those airplanes impacted, the building should not have fallen down.
Oh, no, absolutely. In that international report, not only that, they talk about tritium half-life particles in all of the air in New York. And they go through the whole thing that there were nukes in the basement there. Yeah. Those were nukes.
Back to what you were reading from the architects saying, we know what the design capabilities are, and that would not bring down these buildings in a demolition, you know, in 10 seconds.
We just had to add a nuke or two and a little thermite here and there.
And Jesse was saying that he went there 3 weeks later and they couldn't look at the site, and they couldn't go down into the site because it was closed because it was still burning.
Right, because it was
2,500 degrees Fahrenheit.
It was like that volcano right now in Iceland.
Yeah, you couldn't go near it.
No, and you have to be, you know, what is his name? Oh, the Human Torch.
Pele.
Pele, Kali, Durga. It's my understanding about these beings at higher levels is that there's this thing that's happening that I'm aware of with the different kingdoms, because they keep coming and literally poking me in the ribs saying, talk about me, talk about me.
Mm.
And all the kingdoms are coming back to, you know, awaken the people, if you will, from the simple divas to the archangels and these masters that are like 200, 300, 400, 500 feet tall, and they radiate frequencies that affect entire land masses. Some of these beings are working with the changes as part of the hierarchy of the local neighborhood, and they're part of healing Mother Earth, and I think that might be more of what's going on with this volcano. Yet, I don't think the 13 families can mess with Mother at that level. Who knows? And I have to turn that over to Mother.
What do you mean they can mess with Mother? Nobody can really mess with Mother.
No, it backfires on them each time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mother's the chi wu, honey.
Yeah.
Oh, she's everywhere, and you can't see her anywhere.
She's like sunlight.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely. Every shadow goes to her. Okay, so let's go give them some more food for thought here. We were saying that the invading Iraq was potential trigger for an attack on the United States. That's heavy-duty stuff to cover up. The White House made sure that this critical finding was deleted from their report to Congress. 6,000 U.S. soldiers, and then we went over that, 1 to 2 million.
Okay, wait a minute. Sorry, Tara, I have a question about this.
Yeah.
Why did they go into Afghanistan 4 weeks after 9/11, and why did they go into Iraq a year later? How did they pick that?
That was their plan, to do things first in Afghanistan, first and foremost to get rid of a lot of stuff. And you remember that they were testing. Get this. They used Afghanistan to test weapons. Let's see how this works so that we can plan what we're going to do in Iraq here. That's why they went in there.
But nobody else was doing it.
Target practice. There has never not been anything that they haven't created yet. They create the theater so they can see how far they can go. They had this thing planned out for another 100 years out into the future, Lady Master.
Because they live at a level in which
it's beyond explanation, other than it was going to take a superhuman understanding. And that's really what it's taking now. And, you know, in a sense, look at how great this is, because when all is said and done, we have a way now, a way in to everybody's heart, because it's so gross. It is so hyenas, as Ariel says. How can you forgive someone? Teach me how to forgive. And, you know,
it's easy, because we're all one. We're all the same. Easy to forgive.
The little thing, I look at words a lot, and you look at forgiveness sake. You do it for the sake of forgiveness, because what else is there? You're going to go fight some more like that? Is that going to make that better? Are you going to get revenge?
Mother Sekhmet said none of us are clear, clean, and criminal free. All of us have done things.
Forgiveness is an act of love that begins with our own self. Self-forgiveness for participating anytime, anywhere, in any lifetime, whether I think I know about it or remember it or not.
On any planet, on any star system, in any dimension, layer, or level.
Exactly. I mean, you know, even if you nuked an entire planet, you might have. Who knows? You know that you came here at this time to take responsibility for it all.
Right. We have to have a bigger vision and see all of it, not just tunnel vision that it's only Earth. It's not.
No WikiLeaks, anybody, in your my backyard. No WikiLeaks. No more. Oh, 6,000 U.S. soldiers. Wow, well, okay. 1 to 2 million U.S. soldiers dead as a result of the Iraq War. 20 times the struggle with 20 times. Okay, yeah, 20 times that are struggling with serious war injuries. Over 1 million Iraqi civilians dead, and add about 4 million more, you'd be about right. As a result of the chaos unleashed by the invasion, the gunshot wounds, the car bombings, etc., this is the true horror of the Iraq War. Collateral murder. To begin with, this... To begin with, this provocative tape, one that we as citizens have every right to see, is a moment in time in a much broader attack on every... Iraqi, on every person, you know, on Iraq, on everyone then, where one is harmed all of us. The U.S.-led sanctions after Gulf War I sought to deny Iraq any imports over a decade. Saddam Hussein continued to build palaces while the millions who hated him struggled, suffered, and died due to the denial of medicine and other necessary goods. Just to mention here, he had over $100 billion of U.S. dollars.
Thank you.
Sorry. I think the computers are nanite sentient, and they said, it's my turn. I got something to tell everybody.
See what I mean? All the kingdoms want to speak up and play.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's a celebration even in the sense that now we know it's really over. These guys can just take a good look at those sad sack bases. The deadly sanctions ran parallel to regular bombings of Iraq. Oh, I was saying, Saddam was saying $100 billion in his bunkers, and it was bribe money because he has all this footage of every one of these monkeys having sex with each other, having parties having sex with each other. And you can imagine that they were doing it on his film. And he says, I'll show the world. I want $100 billion, and he got it.
Mm-hmm.
Where is that stuff now?
Oh, where it's in the hands of?
KOS.
That's right.
That's what I figured.
And, you know, he was saying this at 2006. He was saying, we've got football fields full. How much more do you need?
Right.
Of evidence, those who planned the invasion ignored warnings that Iraq's rigidly controlled society would collapse without effective post-invasion planning. The central piece of what planning there was included the Iraq Army as guarantor of order after the invasion. Yet the army was disbanded. And along with that, Mr. Bremer stole the Bank of Iraq. Oh, after the loss of this 400,000-man army, who was left to maintain order, and then it's got the thing, was it murder? On the pictures there, it sure was. It was taking pot shots. Okay, after the loss, okay, was it murder? Viewing the 17-minute or 39-minute version of the videotape leads one to focus on two things as a result of the introductory material provided by WikiLeaks. First, we know that a photographer and his assistant were killed, along with the driver of a van who attempted to rescue the assistant. We also know that there were two children traveling in the van with the driver, their father. That's for before the tape event starts. Then we're drawn to the methodical targeting of the men carrying the weapons. The initial identification of a weapon was a mistake, since from the introduction, we know that Noor Eldon is carrying a telephoto lens, not a RPG.
Mm-hmm.
The incorrect ID. That's what they did and killed hundreds of people like this during these wars. From all different countries, there are many more than that, thousands. I mean, when you talk to every country's people and find out how many of their reporters are dead.
Mm-hmm.
The incorrect identification of a camera as an RPG is the basis for all that follows in this first segment of the tape. The shooting of a man gathered on the street and the destruction of a van. This is war. A war that was not planned or initiated by the crew of the Apache helicopter. The truly responsible parties for starting this war did so with premeditated intent. They deliberately lied to and deceived the public. They are the very first cause of the war and all of the deaths and the suffering. And they passed on their evil thoughts and intentions and feelings to those kids in the cockpit, too. Their attitude was no different, not cool. The helicopter crew was called into action, responded, and made a fatal error. And that's not true either. At the start, that was compounded, causing the deaths of the Iraqis on the ground. Was this murder? Without doubt, argued one serious analyst. And yes, it was, because, you know, they had to kill all the rest of those kids that came to pick up the living one. And the kids, another wild critical of the mission, had too many unanswered questions to reach that conclusion. Yet why is there a focus on the Apache crew? When you lock, load, and deploy the world's most powerful military machine, many people die. Civilians die in every war. Several hundred thousand civilians who were killed by U.S. and British bombing of German and Japanese cities during World War II. That was more than that. How many people really died in World War II, everybody? Just ask yourself. When you hear a president say he's sending the troops, civilian deaths are part of the deal. 26 million is just for starters. Those were just the ones that ended up in the death camps. How many others died? Really, the most useful questions are the most fundamental. They address the first cause of the war and the means to sustain it.
which members of the administration were responsible for concocting the lies that we used to take the United States to war, which members of Congress voted again and again to fund the war, Hillary, twice, two, three, four, here we go, some more. Once the facts surfaced about the lies used to start the war, even before the invasion. However, the dead ended up that way, the premeditated lies used to launch an invasion and an occupation, and those who enabled this by deliberately ignoring the truth are clearly the responsible parties for the collateral murder. Will one of them step forward after all of this and say, we think the price was worth it? Rami, you said that somebody said that on a public media, who was that, that there were way more than 3,000 people killed on 9/11. Who was that and what station was that? Do you remember? You came in here and told.
I can't remember at the exact moment.
Well, I do remember that happened. So
I do remember it, too, and I forgot who said it, but I was shocked.
Yeah, and that was like a week ago, everybody. So you're right, Beth, to get on it now with 9/11. This is going to really get everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody now in your neighborhoods, you're going to have some basket cases. I mean, there you are. We all are.
Colin from Georgia has been waiting a little while here if we are ready to take another caller.
Yes, yes, yes.
Thanks, Marita. Helen, hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Hi, Helen.
Great. Listen, I just got a hot email, and I will not be on the calls until the 28th because I'm leaving to celebrate with my mother's 95th birthday.
Oh, congratulations.
So, but this is too hot to ignore. I'll read you the title, and you let me know, think of this if I'm right.
Okay.
Andrew McGuire finally exposes systemic fraud by CFTC and J.P. Morgan.
Yep.
I thought that was important.
Yeah,
this
Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers.
Hello?
Yeah, we're all getting hit now.
All right. Do you have this already?
I don't. What paper is that in?
It's not in a paper. This is what I got on my email just now, and I'm leaving, you know, after the call tonight, I'm getting ready to go to sleep and get up early tomorrow morning to leave.
Well, just read the title to me, Helen. I'll find it.
Andrew McGuire. Well, I opened it on the YouTube, which it's too small for me to read. But, you know, I can enlarge it, I guess. Andrew McGuire finally exposes systemic fraud by CFTC and J.P. Morgan.
Thank you.
It's, and this is the only video with all the currently known information, you know, that this guy knows of that forwarded it to me.
Okay, I found it.
You found it?
Yep.
Great.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Great job. Keep the. Oh, and Beth, I personally knew Nada Yolanda also.
Thank you.
And I was.
Are you listening, Rama?
I'm just like, I have to learn how to integrate data so I can type as fast as you.
That was a well put structural sentence about what you needed to learn. That's very cool.
Helen, you knew Nada Yolanda, yes?
Yes, yeah. From, I traveled to Davie a couple of times, and but the accident took place, so I was unable to travel to Tennessee, you know, and then. She was
right.
Very concerned when I had my accident, and she asked Joe Polanski, you know, is this karmic or what? And then she told me that this was my gift to Mother Gaia to help with her transition.
Wow.
So that's what I'm going through.
Wow. Well, I went to Tennessee several times, and I'm still in touch with David Manning in Canada. He's mm-hmm. married.
David Manning?
Yeah, he worked in the office there. He was one of the...
Oh, okay.
You remember David?
Yeah. Then you know Phil L.
I know Phil L. and I know Dr. Knapp, and I know all of them. Douglas.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Are you talking about?
Yeah. Okay, just wanted to touch base on that because...
Nadia Yolanda and her work partner, Mark, we were talking about this on Friday, and they wrote one of the quintessential New Age books because Nadia Yolanda, her name was Pauline. She channeled Sananda and said he was, you know, working on the New Jerusalem, which was this gigantic UFO, you know, that went around, you know, Earth and she was one of the accurate channels that brought that to us in the 1960s. And this is every New Age student.
She said she's the head of the Karmic Board.
I don't know, but the name of the book is Mark Age Period and Program, so check that out. She also channeled all of the masters.
I probably have it. And have read it because I have almost all their books.
Right.
Okay. Well, just wanted to touch base on that.
Thank you. Thanks for the video.
I just wanted to mention Rama was now that we're talking. I don't know why you were telling me that while that was going on, but.
It just came up. That's why, because on Huffington Post, they got this huge headline that, this is Goldman defies belief.
Yeah.
Bank staff
over $5 billion in pay bonuses in wake of fraud charges.
This is why I have
They don't even care. They just do it anyway, right? They have nothing to lose. They might as well take the whole enchilada because they're already...
They're
already going.
I hate it when someone uses that expression. It makes me hungry every single time.
I like enchiladas too.
I do.
I gotta go. I'm going to go get myself an enchilada.
Don't you go yet. We have to listen to the captain speak.
Okay.
I just wanted to mention that was by Vincent Bugliosi before the House Judiciary Committee, July 27, 2008, when that happened already. Just pulling these things forward right now is, boy, we are here, everyone. Now the process kind of shifts a little bit. And remember the astrology said by tomorrow is the 19th. So a week from tomorrow is the 26th, and that's what in the astrology they said that would be the window for Barack Obama to take that hammer of Allah all the way down to the table.
And that could be 9/11 as well as first contact as well as the economic.
How about all together?
I'd like to see the simulcast. Thank you.
Simulcast.
I could have that tonight. That would be fine.
I'm sure.
I say that every single day, so don't take me too seriously.
Remember, the universe gives us what we ask for.
Well, Tony D and I say that to each other every single day. Today would be fine.
Yeah.
I know there's others out there that say that every day, too.
I mean, you know, we still got to account for those 14,000 bodies that were in a morgue 2 blocks down the road from 9/11 Ground Zero.
Yeah.
There are pictures out on the internet that are so ugly that I can't post them. But you can Google images for jumpers on 9/11. It's terrible. Yeah.
This could be the week that was. I mean, I still go back to what Amy says, give people a taste of war for 1 week.
And do it
24/7 and don't let them watch anything else for 1 week.
there will never be another war on the planet.
I agree with that.
That's what she said.
And you would have to include some of the videos from Abu Ghraib.
That's right. What our children were told and bought the lies and then recruited themselves into positions where now, you know, they have artificial limbs. And I am not blaming anyone. I am just saying that as my father shows up and the others, there will be healing for all beings. And I don't know how that works yet. I would have to just say, like the story I was told yesterday about the man that went to the Stargate and he got his foot back. Sounds pretty good to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, this reminds me of the April 4th speech by Martin Luther King Jr. And he was saying that it's mass genocide to send the poor into, you know, to become soldiers for war. And nowadays we tell our young teenagers that, oh, you come from a poor family, we can pay for your college, but you have to sign up for war first.
Oh, by the way, there's always a counterbalance when all this dark stuff comes out, because we're now learning that there were more than one Ark of the Covenant, too.
There were, yes, there were.
I know there was one in Ethiopia. There was. Now we read just yesterday about the one that got carried through all the way from the Assyrians to the Greeks to the Gibraltar.
To Ireland.
Ireland, and then it ends up in Scotland.
And there was a man on local public access radio with, Diego Mulligan, and he had this man on who actually was in the presence of the Ark, and he experienced a frequency shift in his own being where he was suffering from cancer, and being in the radiance of the Ark in Turkey. This was somewhere in Turkey that he had this experience. He became an immortal. And it was quite by accident that he found out that he became immortal.
I remember that.
And it shocked the heaven out of me to hear the story. And he tested this out, and he found out he cannot die. And he is, you know, quite...
What did he do to test that out?
He had somebody try to shoot him.
Oh, yeah, good.
And the bullet wound healed within seconds. And, it, you know, it's happening, just like the stories in The Heroes, you know, the TV show.
That's what happened to that man that was shot point blank in the back of the heart and left face down for dead. He had those rejuvenation chambers. Only took 10 minutes to reverse the aging process. And he was still in the process after to get out of there. And, I mean, it was 45 minutes to the hospital. He should have been dead instantly. And the ruckus brought the neighbors. The neighbors took him all the way there. I mean, halfway there, he was sitting up talking to them. By the time he got into the, I mean, they looked at the wound, and it was like the bullet had dissolved, and the whole thing was just like on the
Taken.
Taken, when Allie did that, put her hand. In other words, that's going to be what we can all do now. In other words, once we understand we actually are connected, it was only the illusion, and I'm just saying, you know, only the lonely. This is whole, that is whole, taking away whole from whole. Whole still remains whole. I mean, that's the reality. You know, nothing's ever been destroyed in the universe. You know, this is just a theater. How much of this kind of war theater are we done? Are we done?
I would say this is the final.
This is the final push, because they want to do it in Iran now.
Mm-hmm.
And Iran. Russia and Iran, you know, I explain this again. When Barack went with Chuck Hagel, was it, to Russia, it was about
espionage
and
nuclear secrets.
and nuclear secrets.
Yeah.
And all that, what did he, he almost got himself into a Siberian gulag and dead.
I would say that Mr. Putin and Mr. Obama had a little chat, and Mr. Obama and Mr. Putin said, bye-bye, Zbigniew Brzezinski, you're cat food.
Oh, Mr. Putin said that? Oh, did cat enjoy her dinner is my question.
I am just saying.
Just checking if I'm listening.
I'm just saying.
That means Brzezinski is cat food, and it's already been ate and digested, and it went back to the void, folks. And what we got there is either, I guess that's a hologram.
It could very well
be. And Rachel Maddow just had that hologram on her show.
I know.
Not too many shows ago.
Oh, he was on Morning Joe, but that's because his daughter Mika brought him on.
Right.
Oh, God, yeah.
She is creepy. When I look at her, I get... I'm not kidding. I get a feeling like Cruella de Vil from...
It's true.
Well, you know, Joe Scarborough ain't shabby himself. He's really not a good guy.
Joe Scarborough, he wants to see people like us get tried for sedition for speaking out against the government. It's funny.
Well, I know. He's pretty much a dork, but every once in a while, someone like Lawrence O'Donnell sits down and straightens him out.
Yeah. Keith would come on in the morning and say, dude, you need to straighten up.
Yeah, but then Itchy and Scratchy follow them, and they're really good.
I got to watch.
Itchy and Scratchy?
Savannah Guthrie and Chuck Dodd. Chuck Dodd.
And where did they get these nicknames from?
Oh, everyone calls them that because they're so cute.
Oh, because they're cute. Okay.
They are white knights, and they report accurately, and they follow Joe Scarborough.
Oh, that's good. I see.
Oh, so if you want the real news, you can sleep in a little bit later. You don't have to get up at 6.
I see.
It's a break from Good Morning America, where they absolutely outright lie to you.
Do we want to play one more piece? It's 4:50. We got 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we got 10 minutes.
Yeah. What do you want to play?
Well, I don't know if we have 10 minutes because we might have 5 minutes. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Oh, Don, how is our schedule for the ending of...
This is Seth took over Sunday.
Oh, okay. Hi, Seth. I thought I heard Don at the beginning. Was that you, Seth?
You did hear Don at the beginning.
I did hear Don.
Yeah, I think we only have 5 minutes because it's 6:50 and we should be finished at 6:55, I think.
Right. That's right. Do you have a song for us, Rama?
I do.
Good. Make it a good one.
And then we want to remind everybody about the Ashtar on the Road call again, too.
Okay. Do you want me to give that number?
Why don't you?
Okay, everybody. Right after this, there's a free Ashtar call. It's going to be so great. The number to call in is 712-432-0075. And the PIN code is 389-671.
How about somebody else? We had you in the room.
389-671-pound. We'll see you there.
Okay. I think Brown's almost there.
Yeah. Right here. It's a good song.
Okay. Are you going to tell us or we should just
listen? Thanks,
Brown. You got to listen.
Yeah, let it be a surprise.
Oh, I love her.
Kind friends all gathered round, something I would say. What brings us together here has blessed us all today. Love has made a circle that holds us all inside. A strange neighbors or his family. Loneliness can rise. You must give yourself to love. If love is what you're after, open up your heart to the tears and laughter and give yourself to love. Give yourself to love. I've walked these mountains in the rain. I've learned to love the wind. I've been up before the sunrise to watch the day begin. And I always knew I'd find you, though I never did know how. With lots of sunshine on a cloudy day, standing for you now. So give yourself to love. Love is what you're after. Open up your hearts to tears and laughter and give yourself to love. Give yourself to love. Love is born in fire, planted by the seed. Love can't give you everything, but it gives you what you need. Love comes when you are ready. Love comes when you're afraid. It will be your greatest teacher, the best friend you have made. So give yourself to love. Love is what you're after. Open up your hearts to the tears and laughter and give yourself to love. Give yourself to love.